Welcome to another episode of Morelia Python Radio. And in this episode, we are talking with Darren Whitaker from Morelia by Design. He's probably most known for the inland carpet morph, the silver peppered. But Darren has some amazing carpet python projects. They range from crosses to pure locality type of projects. It was awesome to be able to catch up with him and talk about what's going on since the last time we talked. We spoke and shared pictures of the animals he is working with. If you want to see what we're talking about, you can check him out on his social media. Go look at Morelia Design, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, or you can check out our Patreon where we share the video from the interview. This is episode 555. Let's get into it. All right, welcome to episode 555, and we are having a return with Darren Whitaker from this House of Silver Pepper, the Silver Pepper Inland, Morelia by Design. One of my favorite, I think it's probably still my favorite carpet morph of all time that I'll probably never be able to have.
Is it because it's a badass look, which it is?
Or is it because
you can't have it and it's right here?
It's probably a little both.
It makes it better.
It's a little both. It's a little both. You want what you can't have, you know.
Exactly.
That kind of thing.
It makes it more appealing that somebody's like telling me no. And when that person is the United States and Australian government, then it's like, oh, well, now I really want it. So, yeah.
I want it even more now. I want it better.
Just making it worse.
So that's a real problem for us, because out here we're very limited to what we can have, obviously. Mm. I reckon if ever, not that it would happen, but if ever I ended up and moved to the States, it would just get out of control. I've got to have one of those, and I've got to have some of those, and what are these? Well, I haven't had them before. Let me get some of those too. Suddenly it'd explode out of control. Be like,
you'd very quickly get on my level of the mass insanity that is my house with my species and all that fun stuff. So yeah, it's good level. Yeah. I like it.
Python's now. We don't want any of that. You guys got shit over here. This is
just like don't want any of this stuff.
I'm actually surprised the peppers haven't found their way through that magic portal, but I believe that portal's been.
I'm a little pissed that they have not. How long does it take to go through the goddamn portal?
So, couldn't the portal have been open like a couple more years to squeeze out Owen Kelly and Imbricata and a silver pepper?
Just send over your request list.
Okay, yeah. Mail it.
Can you send 2.3 of these and 2.3 of those?
Yeah, I know. You know, we always ask every time we have an Australian guest, we kind of ask if there's like, do you see that ever changing for breeders in Australia? I kind of have a feeling that it won't, but
no, Australian government out here, like, I kind of get because we're an island, I kind of get the importation restrictions, for disease, and despite the fact they're out here in a plethora of different species anyway,
right.
But the whole exporting overseas, like I can see their point of, we want to reduce smuggling and wild collecting and all that sort of stuff. But if they did it in a controlled environment in terms of licensing and inspections and all that sort of stuff, like I don't really see a reason beyond that we shouldn't be able to send stuff overseas. Like why couldn't we captive breed, a locale, a stimmy or, coastal or whatever it is, and breed them and say, here's the parents, here's the clutch, here's all we've done. These 50 are destined to go to the US or to wherever, and providing we've got, even the level of DNA sampling, for example, to say, oh, yes, okay, they're not actually a wild collected type thing. They come from your lines. Yeah, no worries, send it over. But the government just goes, no, that's too much of a problem and it'll just never happen. So, which is a pity.
It is because if you were to get approval and get licensed to export,
we would just be throwing legal, money at you.
We would be just dumping money into the Australian government. But then also, like, it wouldn't stop or slow or affect anything illegal happening because if I'm already doing it illegal, I'm not going to change gears and try to do it legally because I'm already kind of.
Isn't that sort of what happened with the Crocs, right? You had to, once they made it a commercial you know, like the farm. Commercial venture for for breeding crocs. Then that when they exploded back in the wild, right?
Yeah, I think if there was a legal gateway to export out of Australia, I think smuggling stuff out of Australia would, you know, what would be the point?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So,
you know, like if you could buy it legally from your, you know, I guess,
why am I going to pay somebody to smuggle it?
Yeah. That's it, you know, and there's a legal, you know, documentation record, so to speak, that if you get into trouble over there, wherever you are with your laws and regulation, you go, here's paper legally imported from
here's all this stuff
in Australia, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, right.
No questions and off you go. But it would be awesome.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I would think it would be good for the breeders over there, you know,
because then you.
Yeah, because is it like something has the reptile hobby in Australia expanded? Has it grown a lot?
It is. It's constantly growing, which is a good thing. You know, there's always more and more people coming into it, but there's still a large exotic side of things. You know, you talk to people and I'll come to the shows and someone will mention they got a corn snake or a milk snake or whatever. And yeah, there's been all sorts of stuff out here for years and years and years, but... The amount of people that come to the shows now is getting better. There's actually a different class of people coming to the shows as well. Whereas back 20 odd years ago, you know, the first show we had that we could sell reptiles was in 07. And, you know, let's just say there were a few rough around the edge type characters coming in that. Whereas now you're seeing a lot more families, you're seeing kids, and, you know, it's grown that they're no longer the, oh, only dead snakes are dead. Only good snakes are dead snakes scenario to like, oh, you know, my son really likes snakes and we decided to come to the show and have a look. And a lot of people just, you know, asking for the first time, you know, how do we keep them? Are they easy to look after? Sure. Et cetera, which is good because kids are the future generation. So if parents that absolutely hate snakes are taking their kids to the show, it's a sign of change, which is great for the hobby. You know, so certainly the hobby is growing in kind of in two directions, I see.
Yeah. And I would say that has kind of been the thing over here where it's like it used to be you'd go get your kid like a fish or a baby turtle. And then like either it would die within a couple months or it would be like the kid would take it to college. And it seems more and more like people are doing more and more research and snakes are slowly becoming a pet that you can set up in your kid's bedroom or something like that. And they can check it out and can do its thing. And, you know, they enjoy watching it. I know my nephew watches all kinds of videos on snake keeping and care and he's all over it. So, he wants me to start breeding, piebald ball pythons and pastels. And I told him,
yes,
whole day in hell, child. Like, you know, it's, I'm like, pick something else. And he's like, but I'm like, no.
So, no, yeah. Anything but that.
No,
anything
no,
but that.
No. I want a lizard. Stop picking things I don't have. Like, it's,
at least can we get, you know, like a clown, like, morph of some sort or something? Not a pastel.
I said, I will get you pastels when you have your own room, your own snake room. Yeah. But in mine, we play by my rules. So,
you don't want a spider to put next to the Jags?
to make this super spider
it's educational
jag.
Purposes, yes. Though. And see it'll if you can make a super.
It'll fix the wobble. What'll happen is the Jag wobbles this way. The spider wobbles this way. And when they're combined, it's a straight – yeah, it's perfect. Yeah.
Like counter-rotating props on a boat, isn't it? They balance each other out, and you go in a straight line. You're right.
It's perfect. I fixed it.
So what would be the corn snake equivalent in Australia? What species? Is there one?
Well, you kind of got to go back. I suppose, you know, before mutations, you had Antaresia and Carpus, and it was, I'd say it was almost a pretty even mix. But then mutations popped up in Carpus, which saw a massive growth in Carpus because obviously Gavin Bedford with Albino Darwin's first popped up, then I had the silver peppers, and then obviously that magic portal we're talking about, Jags turned up and granites turned up and
zebras,
caramels and et cetera, so on and so forth. They turned up. So then carpet sort of like saw this massive growth where everyone's like, oh, cool, got to get into these mutations and start making new things. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly, you know, marbles turn up in children's and albinos turn up in children's. T-plus actually turned up, was probably one of the first mutations we saw in children's from Craig Ladder way back in the day. But so now you're kind of almost seeing a bit of a split. So you're seeing guys that are specifically just doing ants. Because now mm-hmm. there's quite a few variations of mutations. You know, we've got granites, we've got albinos, there's, well, three different lines of T-plus, T-plus dimmies, mm-hmm. two different children's T-plus, marbles. So you're starting to see all the combinations of this stuff starting to grow. So you kind of got the people that like the baby snakes and then us real keepers that keep carpets. See what I did there?
He was there with a little backhand, yeah.
It's all about the carpet.
That's it.
Yeah, no, so, the hobbies, I really see the hobby has been in a great place at the moment because there's so much variety. I can't really say there's, you know, the corn snake equivalent or the ball python equivalent out here because everybody seems to have a bit of a mix of both. Like, some just specifically do Antaresia. And, you know, like I've my first snakes was a diamond python, but then I actually had Antaresia after that. And I've bred Antaresia for, you know, 25 years or something or other. And carpets have grown. When I produced a pepper and you didn't know anything about genetics at all back then. So that kind of put me in a spot where I need to learn this stuff and understand this stuff because it was pretty new to the Australian hobby back in 2007, along with the albino carpet. So. Now, I normally use it as a reference. If someone's looking for something new, they want to get into a new pet or something different, one of the first questions I ask, how big do you want it? You know, do you want something that could get to 8 or 9 feet, or do you want something that's going to get to 3 or 4 feet at maximum? And I try to use that as a guide for someone looking at their first snake. Some people want I want a bread life. I'm like, yeah, you realize they can get up, they're pretty big snake. They can get to, you know, I think my girls were bit over 9 feet and about 8 or 9 kilos, like prime for breeding season, which is a big difference to, you know, a children's python that might be 800 grams or something like that.
Yeah. It is a considerable difference, yeah.
For a big one, yeah, sort of thing. So, or Blomax a bit bigger, but yeah. But yeah, I couldn't really pick is one being something different over the other. I think it's just there's a good mix out there for everybody.
That's good. That's good. It seems like, I don't know, for the longest time, we were the like cross the morphs and stuff. And you guys, well, again, it just seemed that way to us that people were more into locality and stuff. And now it seems like we flip flopped. And, you know, we're here with our you know, we have a couple of lines and stuff and we're like, oh, this is locality. Got to keep it pure. Meanwhile, we're watching Australia and they're just like, ah! Read it to whatever.
I threw it in a bin and with this
amazing shit. Oh my god!
Yeah.
You're just like, holy hell, man.
So you guys scratch that itch for me. I don't have to mix shit. I just look at your stuff and go, that's nice. Next, all right,
man. Well, still, like pure stuff is actually getting a little bit harder to find, but there's still plenty of it around if you know where to look. Like I still have lots of pure stuff.
Right.
So I normally use a male or something pure to outcross into a female. Like I always try to.
Right.
Like with the peppers, when I first produced the peppers and I reproduced that trait, the males were the source of outcrossing to everything else. So the females only ever saw pure peppers back in the day unless I was stuck with a male that I had no choice. But I had I had two male peppers and four females. So it gave me the options. But there was always two female peppers that never saw anything but another pepper or a het pepper, like just pure MD stuff.
Yeah.
So I kind of always kept that line pure. My albino darlings, I bought. Simon Stone bred them. The first lot he sold, to friends of mine, Mark and Pia. And when they bred theirs, I bought the first clutches that they produced. And I've still got these down the back here, the big boy. And I've always kept them pure. So I always put him over a couple of het girls. I had a female albino. She was stolen the first year I bred her. But I've always kept that pure line. But then I've taken the albino boy and I've put him over other things to create multi-gene sort of combination. So I've still got pure Murray, still got pure Darwin, still got pure jungles. I've still got pure lines of Max and children's and all sorts of stuff. But it's almost like a stigma that cushy breed morphs. Oh, you're a, depending on where you sit on the fence. Oh, you're a dirty morph breed. I can still breed pure stuff.
I say it with love. You know, it's when I say you're a dirty morph, because I am. I am no church boy here, but it's, you know, but I like it that you have the options drives me crazy is the I have a Bolin's python. I have a Bolin's python male, and it's the only Bolin's I have, and I'm just breeding it to whatever. It's like, well, wait a minute, like, can you just get like something else? Like, do I understand? Like, have a female, please, like female that Bolin. Kind of stuff. Yeah, so it's. Yep. But it doesn't just necessarily go with Bolin's. Like, you could have a pure, gorgeous diamond, and you're like, and I'm going to breed you to this jungle jag. You could also get a diamond female too for like next year.
Yeah.
No. Yep. Okay. Yep. Like, it's that whole thing. So,
and yeah, kind of the other thing to see out here too now is obviously, you know, 25 plus years ago when I got into it, there was no options. Everything was pretty much.
Yeah.
Pure, not necessarily locale specific if you want, but, you know, a coastal was a coastal, a diamond was a diamond, you know, all that sort of stuff. So now you're seeing people getting into the hobby. There's all these mutations around and a lot of stuff, exactly like you said, Owen. Oh, I've got an albino diamond. I'll just chuck it with that over there, you know, a coastal. I'll make some babies. And then they're like, oh, I'll just sell them as coastals or I'll just sell them as this because that's what they look more like, they look like. More in their wild type form, the heads. Mm-hmm. And so then you get people come in to see that and they go, oh, it's a head albino. It's a pure coastal head albino. I'm like, nah, it's not. Like,
works.
So you're seeing a lot of mixed blood stuff, not necessarily genetic stuff, but, you know, pure different morph things. And people are like, oh, you know, here's my pure diamond. You're going to go, that's not a pure diamond, mate. That's across the jungle or something down the track. And, you know, or they put up an integrate and go, oh, look, check this diamond. It's like, it's not a diamond, it's an integrate. Oh, and then they get the shit. So I generally don't comment on stuff anymore. And it's just when you've looked at wild type specific stuff for such a long time, and then someone posts up a picture and you look at it and you go, yeah, no, that's not what you think it is. And I see that as a bad side.
Yeah.
Like whenever I sell something, I'm 100%, even like I've got jungle jags that are now like 98%, you know, pure jungle. They've just been constantly crossed back. Constantly crossed back into jungles to increase that percentage. Even when I sell them, the what you would call the wild types, the jungles, I still sell them as 98%. Like I don't call them pure jungles because I mean, if you're in dog breeding, that'd be deemed pure because it's such a high percentage that they accept that as a pure animal. But, you know, I'd rather be honest.
Dog breeders have such a short memory, though. Wow. They're like a purebred Labradoodle. The word Labradoodle
alludes tells to something me different.
That is – no? Okay. Yeah, all right, fine. You know, that's the thing where it's like as long as – we can only go as far as – that we can go. So I will make sure that you as a customer of mine are 100% in the know, but it's the next one. It's that guy who either doesn't want to either my info in one ear out the other and they sell it or somebody else sells it or they breed it, not fully understanding that it's an 88%er. And then they pose up their animals as pure jungles and stuff like that. So there is always that thing. That's always something that we're fighting.
Yeah, and that's kind of the downside I see because people are getting, I suppose it's probably not the right word, but almost dumber because, you know, they're not, they don't know what something pure is. When you try to explain it, they just want to argue with it because their friend said it was this. Like the amount of people that would buy something and then they see a post, oh, my friend said this is a sunglow. No, that's just an albino. Oh, but he said it's a sunglow. You know, it's like, no, it's not a sunglow. It's just an albino. But they don't want to hear you because sunglow is better, right? It's worth more. So, oh, it's a sunglow now. You know, and this is kind of the, I guess, the downside of the hobby. The breeder probably told him it's just an albino, but his mate said he's got one snake. I saw a photo of one once. Better. And I'm like, what did the breeder tell you? If the breeder told you it's an albino, that's what it is. If it's a suspected sunglow because he's not sure, then he would probably tell you, oh, it, it, I'm pretty sure it's now been, it might be a sung low, but you'll need to breathe that out to prove it out, you know, and see if there's caramels in a clutch sort of thing, and go from there. But, you know, they want something for $200. It's worth, you know, $800 or $500. Yeah. And it's like, just, you know, if guys bred it and, you know, be straight up with it, but unfortunately it doesn't always work that way.
What's the caramel thing? Is somebody's like, that's not a super. I'm like, it very well could be. I am not going to raise it up and breed it myself. If you'd like, I'm selling it as a caramel pasta super. Yes, it looks gorgeous, but you know what? That's also like, that baby is like maybe a year old. I don't know how it's going to progress in the next 2 years. Yep. I have an idea, but then also it could be, that's just such a wide spectrum of, you know, ugly super caramel versus really good looking caramel. Like, I'm just going to, it could
It's almost better. It's almost better to say it's less. And then when it's more,
then I'm the man. I help
then,
you.
Then you'll be like, someone hooked me up.
You know? Goddamn right he did. You know,
we'll see that out here a lot as well. Oh, super caramels. Like, how can you tell? Unless both parents were both supers and the babies, therefore, have no other choice but to be supers.
But to be supers,
But no, they go, oh, it's lighter, it's brighter, it's whatever. Oh, it's a super. I'm like, you cannot tell. I have stuff here that is just carries one copy of the caramel gene, and it is like as good as any supers you know, I've ever seen. And I'm like, I know it's only got one copy of the gene because only one parent had caramel, the other one didn't. So, you know, trying to say to people, yeah, it's a possible super caramel would make more sense if both parents carried the caramel gene. The variation, the polygenic variation within them is massive. I've seen some of the ugliest caramels, like real dark things that have actually proven out to be supers. Yeah. If you looked at it, you'd be laughing and go, is it even a caramel? But they produce entire clutches of caramels, you know, like really. Yeah. And so you can't judge what it looks like as a baby. You need to grow it up, prove it, and you know. But
you also can't judge by basis of – you know, we did a caramel show a couple shows ago, and we were looking back at what would have been considered top of the line caramels back in like 2011, something like that. And I'm like, well, that looks like crap. And it's like, but after several years of like honing and getting good caramels, like an ugly caramel blows those things out of the freaking water. So it's like, you can't even go by that.
Yeah, so, that's right. Yeah. Changes.
I'm curious with the silver peppers, right? Have you seen that same variation that you'd see in other carpet python morphs with that?
There's a lot of, the pure stuff that I've worked with all seems to be very similar, slight variations in it. Some have a little bit more melanin in the patterning than others. Some are a little bit reduced, but all very similar. But the mixed blood stuff, as soon as you introduce the mixed blood stuff, there's a massive variation, huge. I've seen stuff that have been almost complete, like in the hets, for example. So when I did Albino Darwin over the pepper to make the first double het pepper albinos, the variation in the clutches was huge. You would have either ends of the polygenic scale in terms of some looking like an MD, some looking more like a Darwin. So you would get, you know, your more reds, browns, oranges, so to speak, of a Darwin, your more silvery grays that you would get in the MDs. So that, but then there was like some random, I suppose, anomalies in the word where some were just completely fully striped, you know, just completely striped. I'm like, well, that's different. I have no idea. And just one in the clutch. You know, here and there, and you scratch in and go, oh, I don't know where that come from. I've still got one here, male, one of the first ones I ever produced. It's absolutely stunning. Looks like a Darwin coloration, and it's just completely striped. It's a male post-double het, and I just feed it. You know, one day I'm thinking, one day I'll put it over and try and prove it out, but I look at it and think, I should sell that. I'm like, oh, it's just such a unique, cool-looking.
Yeah.
It's one of those add-on to the list I've got. But, yeah, so there is quite a bit of variation, and stepping on to, you know, selling things is not what they are. One of the, well, back when I first released some, I sold some mixed blood 100% hets from, you know, pepper to a jag pairing, so some of the wild type het babies. And long story short, they got sold on to another guy, and then that guy bred them and then was selling them off as possibly pure peppers. And I'm like, no,
that's a misuse of the possible. thing there. Yeah.
And people would then message me and go, oh, are these pures? I'm like, where they come from? So-and-so. I'm like, no. And I said, he knows they're not. Like, there's no doubt that they are not pures. Oh, but he thought they might be. Like, I don't care what he thought.
That's a quick thing. If Eric sold me stuff and I bred it and I wasn't 100% sure that they could be, that they might have been pure, that's a simple email to him being like, hey, what's in these? Yeah. Are these pure? And then he says no. Then I go, okay, like that's it. Yep. So
that's it.
I'm curious is, you know, with that, is there a sense of pressure with being the guy that has this new morph? Is there a sense of stress? Like what is that like to be in that seat?
A sense of stress. Yeah. Okay. So I'm the guy that I've probably bred more peppers in more clutches than anybody else, everyone combined, probably.
I believe the world. Yes.
Yeah. But then you'll get someone that's gone, oh, I've bought off this guy over here, which is fine. Like, you know, I don't expect it from here. But then I want to go to you, Daz, and go, can you tell me about this and what's this and what's that? And then I want to know all the ins and outs about it. I'm like, what did the breeder say?
Yeah.
You know, oh, yeah, but, you know, I bought that off him because it was cheap, you know.
Right.
But now I want to ask you about all the information and all that. It's like I get it. And, you know, I've always been here. I always say I try to help people as best I can. But sometimes you just think, why should I? Like, it's just the right thing. To me, it's the right thing to do. Someone has a question, you got a snake, I try to help them out as best I can. But then I feel like if you want that, in my book, backup service, that help, you know, why didn't you come to me and get a snake? Because I don't care whether you buy a $200 snake from me. You're a customer for life. I'll help you with anything and everything you need, whether it's breeding, whatever. Like, that's – well, I'll say that, but I'd do it with anybody anyway. Like, it's just the way it is. I think if I share my knowledge and help someone else, then that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's – I mean, I've had to –
I always struggled with that.
I mean, I've had people message me being like, I got this bread lie from this guy – who got it from this guy who said they bought it from you. And I wanted to know about its parents. I'm like, did you get like a baby number or anything? Well, they said you produced it this year. I'm like, yeah, I produced bread lie that year, but honestly, that is a wild type bread lie. And I produce a lot of those and I have no idea, nor can I even claim it to be mine. Like, you know, I can't. Like, if you want a bread lie from me, from my stuff, email me, contact me. Like, you know, it's that if trying to find a bread lie and then being like, clearly it's good to go. And I've had people tell me that animals are from these people, not knowing that those people are in my phone. And I'm like, take a picture of it. Is this yours? Send. Hell no. Okay. Like, and that was, he says, nah, dude. Like, it's like just the way it is. So, and that happens, but that's part of the whole snake selling thing.
It is. It's just a hobby, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
You can't control everything forever, and that's the way it goes. So, you know, I just thought, well, if that person comes to me and I help that person out as best I can, maybe the second state they'll buy, they want to come buy one from me.
Right.
So, you know, when you've been in the game for a long time, like you guys have, and that, like so many people come and go because they come in, they want to be the next biggest, best thing. They do the wrong thing by a lot of people, and a few years down the track, it's like, oh, what about my so-and-so? Oh, yeah, gone. Oh,
gone.
You know, ripped off this bloke, screwed over that guy, all this because they want a few dollars. Whereas if you want to be in a hobby for a long time, you just have to do right by people, like have some morals, I reckon.
Yeah. So. Darren, have you ever been credited for breeding something that you've never actually even worked with?
Well, not that I know of. Okay. I actually saw one the other day that someone else was – selling some pepper stuff, and it was like, oh, so-and-so's line of peppers. And I'm like, that's interesting, because he bought them from me and bred them once, and now suddenly it's his line. How does that work?
You know, oh, man. Like, wait a minute.
Like, I've bred Xanthic coastals for like quite a few years. I've got what I call my white line coastals, right? Yeah. People say, what line's that? Well, they come from Wayne Lark's. It's a Wayne Lark's line of coastals.
Right,
it's his line. It's just a line that I've developed off from that. It's still his line of coastals. It's not mine. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm just working with that genetic trait, and I've outcrossed it, and I've produced some other stuff, and this, that, and the other. But still, his line of Xanthics. Right. Just because, you know, I bred the peppers and he's bred one clutch. This doesn't make it his line.
It's not his. No. No.
He got them from me. They stemmed from one person, and that was me. And I just, like, I kind of laughed and went, wow, really? Already? One clutch? Yeah. Is that how this works now?
Oh, wow.
Wow. Excellent. Thanks for that. Yeah. Just made me laugh, I guess.
Yeah, that was a good one. I like that.
So with Brie, yeah, I remember it's similar to you, Owen. I got somebody that messaged me and they're like, hey, this Sun Glow Darwin that you produced. And I was like, wait, what?
Never happened.
I'm like, that never happened, man. And they're like, yeah. They said it was from you. And I'm like, no, yep. Never bred Sun Glow Darwins. Didn't happen. No.
I was, somebody was selling Blue Baron's racers that I allegedly produced last year. And I'm like, I have one. And she's like this big. So I don't know how I produce those. So it was, yeah. I'm like, I don't know how I did that, but good. I'm good. Yeah.
I kind of put it down to you that obviously if you've got a good reputation, it's free to swing off.
Oh,
and Eric, they breed nice animals, blah, 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 blah. I'll just say it's from one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
people just go, oh, they bred it. Oh, it's got to be sweet.
Got to be sweet.
It's got to be all good. Yeah. Now I'll just take your word for it, and away we go.
Right,
waiting for somebody to be like, this is an Owen McIntyre produced Papuan python, and for the whole world to be like, bullshit, it's never happened. He can't breed them. Like it's like a so.
One day
I'll get one day. And everybody's gonna call it that I'm lying. So yeah.
He bought the whole clutch off.
But the whole clutch, he's lying. Yeah.
So how did you approach doing the combos? Did you wanna do it to everything you possibly could? Were there ones that you wanted to try first? Did you stagger it? Like how does that work with you? With the
kind of probably kind of guess maybe in a bit of detriment to myself, but like I didn't want to, you know, take something that was already multi-gened and put it over to the pepper. I wanted to do specific pairings. So first one was always pure Albino Darwin over a pure pepper. So that was to make those double hits. I could have used a Sun Glow or some other mixed blood albino or something like that, but I wanted to see the interaction with minimal influence from a polygenic perspective of, you know, if it was a mixed blood albino coastal or mixed blood albino jungle or something like that, I didn't want to have those other influences, you know, possibly show up in a clutch you produce. I wanted to minimize, you know, from a polygenic perspective, the amount of external influence was in it. So it was just pure Darwin. When I did the exanthic double heads, I got the option to use a ghost. I wanted to do a pure exanthic, but I didn't have the right sexes, just wasn't working properly, and I went, got the option to use a hypoexanthic from Larks, and I used that to make, you know, hypo double het pepper exanthics. When it came to mixing the gene with Jags, because Jags are already such a mixed blood thing out here, it was like, well, whatever. I didn't actually have a lot of Jags at the time. So I bought a couple in different, it was like coastal MD jungle Jags and jungle MD Jags and a few other mixed things. And I bought in a couple of really, they were set, at the time, they were 75% MD Jags, which were really, really nice as babies. So when I bred the Jags, it was like, well, I just want to get the Jag gene into it. And I just used whatever I could get my hands on at the time and bred those. But I wanted to keep the, you know, I didn't have a snow, exanthic albino, I didn't have snows, I didn't have moon glows, I didn't have kind of other options to mix into it. But in saying that, I probably would have done it if I had it. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to make sure that the genes I used were very specific, just so when I produced something, I knew exactly what it was rather than going, oh, wow, look at this crazy thing, and not knowing if it was, you know, like I said, a coastal Darwin albino, for example, not knowing if the influence from the coastal side or a Darwin side, and something weird pops up, it's like, well, where'd that come from? And so
this thing's weird. What is it? No idea.
NFI. So that was, you know, which opened the doors then that when I actually sold them, that people had those other multi-gene animals could suddenly go in and start making triple gene stuff and other stuff. Straight away, which you can never be at the top of the game. That's the way working with mutations is. Like, it's just, you know, one day, you know, just be what you've got and carry on.
Yeah. Did you hold back the, like, so, well, at least over here with like ball python, well, I guess carpet pythons too. It's like you would sort of be like, okay, I'll use Paul Harris as an example, right? When he's selling me a caramel zebra, he made caramel zebras years ago. So he kind of knows, like, you know, he's bred them at least two times by the time he's, you know, selling them or something like that. You approach the same way?
I've heard this thing, I don't do it for money. I've never bred snakes. I've always been in because I just have the passion and the enjoyment. And back when I produced the peppers in 07, I had to learn about genetics. I've just found an interest in that. So I enjoy working with genetics. I find it interesting and challenging, you know, to make the combination. So when I produce the double hets or triplets, whatever it might be, my first instinct is, well, there's another clutch I need to hold back. And that's what I hold the whole clutch back. I'm not called a hoarder for no reason. And
I'm pretty sure we're really starting to figure out how you got to that number that we were talking about earlier. How did it happen? I'm beginning to find clues.
So I tend to hold everything back. And I guess over the years, like, I've always maintained, like, if you're going to buy into a project, you want to get like 2.3 at least. Because you never know. A male doesn't need a female, doesn't. Whatever, one gets a tumor, one escapes, like things can go wrong, whatever it might be. So I've always been like, you know what, I'll just keep the whole clutch and then I'll see how we go. And I've still got most of those adults now, because coupled on top of that, we talk about ratios, right? And your odds and stuff. So you get a double gene animal, you know, you got 1 in 16 chance of producing, you know, let's say an albino pepper, for example, and you think, oh, okay, like, odds are pretty good. I should get it in maybe not the first clutch, but you might get in a couple of clutches. I've probably had more bad luck with odds than anybody else I know. Well, my odds, I'm just bloody unlucky, I tell you. And I've watched other people produce their own double hets, grow them up, and get albino peppers in their first clutches.
And son of a bitch.
It's not fair. Yeah.
I hatched the very first season. I think I produced like three clutches. I didn't want to, you know, go over the top and, I could have probably pumped out about 8 or 9 clutches. But I thought, you know what? I've got enough animals I'm holding back. I think I did about three clutches and I got one albino pepper. The one albino pepper born was the male, which I think, oh, well, that's great.
Okay. Yeah.
But he has no tongue. So, epiglottis, it's all fine, no tongue, doesn't tongue flick, doesn't do anything. Could not get it there before.
Yeah,
I've actually seen a couple now. I've actually got it in another line of albinos that I've got that also has no tongue. Like, just doesn't matter what you do, you can hold the mouth, you can try, do whatever. There's just no tongue. I'm not sure if it's like just stuck there, whether they just doesn't exist. Obviously, you haven't, you know, sent it to a vet for inspection, but
right,
just doesn't tongue flick. So getting that to feed was rather tricky. So it actually assist fed.
Yeah.
Right. But it took, how old are we now? It's probably 6 years now. And it's just started eating medium rats. Like, it's literally, like, if it gets a medium rat in, I'm stoked. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Like, it's actually a big feed for it. The thing almost losing like a V35 type. Like, it's still not big at all. Yeah. So then the next year I don't think I produced any the next year out of the same sort of thing. I think it was about 4 clutches. The next year I think I got 2. One's an adult female she needs a tub clean, but she's just there. She's an absolute machine. She'll eat anything, including your face.
Excellent.
And then, I think a year or two later I produced another one. So last year was the first year I actually went, you know what? I'm effing done with this. I'm just showing everything. And I think I produced about 8 or something or other like last season. But I'm like, it's taken me longer to produce albino peppers than anybody. Even though I've had the hets for a longer time than anybody else, other people have produced them, grown their babies up, like if they've had a male, grown them up and have them breeding. And I'm still like, oh, just don't have a male.
Wow.
So last season, I actually took the first one Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know what? I've got a project here. I'm just, I don't know if you'll breed, but I'm willing to sacrifice the season with this female. Mm-hmm. And I chucked him in. I tried not to, I didn't want to disturb him too much. I thought, no tongue. I don't know whether, you know, the lack of smelling, they would sense the female as such. You know, you think there's obviously some sort of instinct they would have to want to mate, but whether that sense of smell existed and is a major part of it, I didn't know. So I thought, what the hell? I'll chuck him in. And anyway, he did the job. I never saw him lock up once, saw nothing. I put him in with the female and literally just left him there, just ignored them, never separated them, just left them together. And one day I walked, he went, oh, female's crafted. She's like, ovulating. I'm like, wow, this is cool. I wonder if he did the job. So, yeah, sure enough. Don't want to give too much away, but yeah, he did prove out to be the father of the clutch. And the female, so he was Albino Pepper. The female carried Albino, was a posset Albino, and they produced Albinos in the clutch. So it proved out that, you know, she was head Albino and he was the father, because nothing else that carried Albino gene or Albino had ever been over it before. So I'm like, oh, cool. So, yeah. So he did the job despite having no tongue, and he was certainly of age, like, so to speak. Not big. He's tiny.
Right.
But, yeah, but he did the job. So another one of those multi-gene projects along the way.
It's so weird to think about how it would function without a tongue. It's like, it seems like tongue flicking and that kind of sensory is just so important to them. And yet, all right, you figured it out. Whatever. Yeah. Knock yourself out, man.
Getting the feed is the tricky part. You know how you can sometimes you can strike their back and they'll arch up and everything? Yeah. That's the only way in getting the feed. So if I do that and he arcs up, I know he wants to eat. And he'll sit there and he'll put his mouth on it and he'll look at it, and then sometimes he won't do it. So what you got to do is basically rub it, getting the coil up, and then getting to coil around the rat. If you can get him to take a wrap around the rat, shut the door. It's a done deal. He will eat it. Occasionally he will strike. Occasionally he'll be like, he'll strike it, but it's hit and miss. And he'll eat now and then won't eat for 6 weeks. And then he'll eat three in a row and then won't eat. And, you know, it's just one of those things. So
and there's always one in the collection that's just like, I got it, drop it. And I dropped it behind my hide. And you come downstairs and you're like, oh god,
here somewhere.
Why wouldn't they drop it in a water bowl and just ferment?
It's almost as bad as monitor shit.
Yeah.
I don't miss that.
No, me neither. Nope. So do you have a favorite that you produced, Comba? Is there one that we were just like blown away? They didn't.
It's hard. Like, I've always loved the pure MD peppers. I just think they're so unique and so different. Mm-hmm. As soon as you've crossed that gene out, it's very hard to get anything similar. But I did produce one that's got a bit of a special place, and it's that, I don't know if you've seen the photo, but it's almost a completely reduced pattern silver pepper. It's almost patternless sort of thing. It's got a few like scales on it and everything. And it's got a white belly on it. Like, it's a pepper posset albino. So it's from the albino Darwin clutch. I've probably got a photo around somewhere. But yeah, it was one. It came out. It was very reduced pattern. Stand out in the clutch. It's absolutely
not that pick. One, is it?
Yeah, that's the girl. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. Wow. Okay.
Wow. Yep, that's the girl. Yeah. When she was born, she had almost no melanin in her. And I don't know if I spoke about it last time, but the peppers get this. I call it ghosting. So you get something quite dark, and then other days you light them up, and a bit like Ruffies. Ruffies will go dark, and then I get a faded appearance to them.
Yep.
These things get the same thing. Really noticeable on the pure stuff, but she's the same. You're going there some days, and that melon's even reduced even more. So she's nice and
Jesus.
You know, I call her my patternless pepper girl.
But that's nice. Yeah, that is so pretty.
Yeah,
I love the black underneath the scales. You know, like if you look down in like this area.
Yep.
You see like
almost a black circle around it. Yep. Mm-hmm. Just
going. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Very cool.
So, yeah, so she's one. I haven't last, you know, I had a bit of a bad year last year with family and stuff, but yeah, she produced a clutch once and she just produced all slugs. And then the next year I was like, oh, I'll breed her next year. And then, you know, obviously I lost my father and my mom and everything else. So just the season kind of went to shit. Yeah. So I never paired her. So this year I'll pair her. I'm going to put her with a proven breed, a double het boy that I've got here, just to prove out if she carries the albino gene, or I might put the albino pepper boy over one or the other, just to prove that out and go from there. I actually don't think the albino version will look as nice with just being patternless albino. But if I can produce more like her in the pepper, I think that's a try to reduce that melanin even more. I think it's a cool little project.
Yeah, that's a cool look for sure.
I think we're kind of drawn to contrast and that stuff. And I feel like some mutations are so good at with the normal colors that when you do albino, it's like you lose a step. Like I love me a good zebra. I can't connect with an albino zebra. Like I can't do it. Like it just seems like it's incorrect or something like that. I just can't see it. So
yeah, you're right. Like going back to when I went to Tinley Park, it was one thing. There was a guy there and he was selling albino pythons and stuff, just ball pythons. All he had was albino stuff. And that was eye-opener to me because I looked at it and went, this guy just had three sections and it was like high yellows, high whites, and, you know, pretty much 50-50 high contrast sort of albino stuff. I looked at it and went, you know, this is the stuff that we just don't do back home. Everyone just goes, I'm just going to grab an albino and I'm just going to put it with that. There's no consideration. Right. Like the variation in albino darlings is massive, right? You get ones that are like a lot whiter. You get some that are a lot more yellow, some that are banded, some that are striped. There's huge variation within the pure albinos. But there's no most people don't have a thought process behind where the outcome they want to produce in 10 years. So they'll just, need an albino. I'll just grab that one because it's cheap. And then, I want to put it with a granite or a pepper, so I'll just get this one over here and that'll do.
Right.
Whereas when I look at that, I think you could take an albino gene. Like people can't always afford to be at the top of the morph game. Right? I know I was one. I couldn't afford to buy everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I say to people, you don't have to have the latest and greatest. You can – I've seen people do it with jungles. I've seen people do it with striped jungles. You know, just work on making the very best of that one particular, even a polygenic mutation that they can make.
Yes.
Just constantly putting the best striped jungles to striped jungles or, you know, defining, you know, an albino trait in a Darwin, whether that's, you know, a high contrast thing or whether it's a, you know, this one's got a really – some get a really, like, white head top end and then more yellow towards the tail. Some are striped. Whether you just actually work on that within the mutation itself, you know, there's so many things you could do to achieve and make a name for yourself if that's what you want in the hobby. You don't have to make, you know, a Zeb Jag quadruple head exanthic albino pepper granite. You know what I mean?
Be somebody
that's cool. I'm not saying don't try to achieve that, but. If your budget doesn't allow you to be there, you don't need to be there. You can still make nice stuff with what's available if you put the time and effort into line breeding quality animals.
That's the thing where it's like I find that some of the best animals that I've produced have been from animals that I have produced. So like ones that my holdbacks, like I've been clawing at this to get this particular look for the last 10, 15 years. So it's like...
Yeah.
You know, I'm the one who's doing all the steps there. So,
well, Aaron, it's sort of like me and Owen were talking about this a little while ago. It was sort of like we had a question of like, what would we do different if we were getting into carpets now, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things that I brought up is like, it's exactly what you just said. When I was getting into the carpets, I wanted everything, right? And I wanted.
It's like me going to the States, isn't it? Just want everything.
Yeah, I'll take one of everything. Yep. Yep.
You know, this morph is coming out. Oh, well, yeah, I better get this. Meanwhile, Owen is just focusing on caramel, right? He's just like, this is what I can do. This is what I can afford. And when I look at us, you know, 13 years later, you know, most of his stuff is on another level as opposed to the stuff that I was just breeding to make a combo of a morph, right?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Because although, you know, the stuff that I was producing was nice, but like the same refinement wasn't seen in what Owen's producing as far as caramels go, as opposed to where I'm making a caramel albino or, you know, caramel albino jag or, you know,
yep.
Zebra tiger jags or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's just, it seemed like in those days I was sort of just trying to focus on, you know, seeing what, similar to you, I was like very curious of what it would look like. Oh, what would this look like? Or what would this look like? What if I put this together? What happens? What if I add this subspecies in? You know, how is this to change? Yeah. And it's two different ways to do it, but I kind of look at it and think I probably would have had, well, I have like the citrus tiger and the poison ivy stuff. That's sort of stuff like I've refined, and that stuff is top notch. But I don't know. I don't know which way is right, but I can definitely relate to, you know, when I go to Owen's house and he's like, oh, check out this. I'm like, what the hell is that?
That's caramel from last year. Yeah.
And I'm like, what the hell, man? You're sleeping on me. I never saw this before. This is, what are you talking about? You
know? See, it's locked in the vault.
I don't let anybody see it. That's the whole thing. Yeah, no. Y'all can see what
he's
I'm.
He's got some sleepers over there, people.
Yeah. Check this room out. I'm not going to show you the hidden one over here.
Yeah. Don't open that door. What's that door? Yeah. Don't worry about it. It's not for your eyes. Like,
It's for my eyes only. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. But I think that's the thing, though. There's no real right and wrong.
No.
Right.
Like I hear people come on, they're very passionate, like, oh, you know, you put something with the bread lie, you're making mutt breeder, blah, 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 blah. Well, that's fine. That's your opinion. I get it. Like, that's cool.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make what other people are doing wrong. It's just wrong in your eyes. You know what I mean? Right. I've always had the thing, what you do in your house, that's your business. If you know, like I'm on some of these hybrid pages. It's not something that I would do, but I look at, you know, some of the bat eaters and bloody carpondros and, you know, carpet womers and, you know, whatever other stuff. Some of the names I scratch through and think, what the f*** is that?
You know what, what was the one that we were looking at? Somebody had a green tree python and a blood python. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, how does that even work? Where does that snake go?
The one's in the tree. The one. I don't understand.
There's nowhere to do what to do. Like,
you know, it's not my choice, not what I would do.
Yeah.
But people are going to do it regardless. And, you know, it's like, is it wrong in some people's eyes? Oh, that's, you know, it's a mutt, it's monitor food, get rid of it, this, that, and the other. But those guys that are, they think that's the coolest thing since sliced bread.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's that, there's always a difference of opinion. Like, Owen's like, oh, yeah, cool, I'm just going to breed caramels and I'm just going to refine that line and make it the best. Eric, I want to put this and that, see what that makes. And I suppose when you've produced silver pepper, you know, luckily for me, being a patent mutation, or how does it work with everything else? How does that gene, you know, you've got something new. It's not like I could Google a granite pepper and go, I wonder what that looks like. It doesn't exist. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't exist. So to me, it's like, well, someone's going to do it. I may as well try and start doing it. So, you know, that's kind of where you're at. But, you know, I think everybody, you know, what they do in their house, I don't really care. Like it's for them and theirs. I don't really see it as a right and wrong. It might be wrong in my opinion to, you know, make a carpondro sort of thing, but you might think they're the coolest thing ever. So, you know, that's your thing. Go for your life. I've only always said that if that's what you're going to do when you sell the babies, be straight up when you sell the babies.
Yeah.
Tell them exactly what it is so that that person makes an informed decision whether they want to buy a hybrid like that as such. Or whether they go, no, you know what, I just want to buy a pure coastal or a pure chondro or whatever it might be, you know. Like, just when it comes to selling, be honest with what it is you've got. And then, you know, it keeps it even, I reckon.
But, yeah, and then just don't get mad when you're like, look at this thing. And I'm like, that's cool. Yeah. Like, if I'm not doing backflips, like, don't get mad at me. Like, it's like,
yeah, that's exactly right. You might, I'm like, I look at the hybrid stuff and think, oh, that looks cool. Would I ever buy one? Oh, hell no.
That's
cool. If that makes you happy, that's fine. Like, it doesn't worry me, but yeah, that's not going to ever come into my collection. Thanks for coming. But, you know, people probably say the same thing about albino cross bread light, you know, because it's bread
light.
But
out here, it's huge.
That's like,
I mean,
white and red.
I understand that. And when I forget, was it Joe Ball that had like crazy albino bread lie that was just like, he posted up a picture of it and it was just insane. Like, it was just like, holy shit. It was, you know, and then there's another one that's an inland albino. Oh, what's the guy's name?
I've got a few of those.
Starts with an L. Yeah. I know. I was looking through your stuff. I don't remember seeing, like, I don't remember seeing but it's like really orange, right? Is that the,
Yeah, I've got some of those. There's probably some of them. It's funny. I really should take way more photos than what I do. I get incredibly lazy, I suppose. Like, occasionally I get
I know what they look like. I don't need you to, anybody else to.
That's one.
Is that it?
Albino. Yeah, that's one. Yeah, I've got a few of them. Yeah. That's inland. That's the inland. So that was actually born. It's probably an earlier. I think, pretty sure it was that one. It was one that was born. It was just like, it was an albino, but it looked like a caramel. It was just like completely patternless and so red that it was almost that tanny color. Mm-hmm. And then it took a while to start seeing the pattern start to come out. I think I've got older photos of that somewhere or other.
Its head stamp is huge.
That's the expression I had right there. This one.
Yeah, the shocked face. Yeah.
Yeah. But see, it's the same thing with the polygenics in these, right? I've got some that are that red, but then I've got almost just completely two-tone albinos that are just yellow, bright yellow and white. So there's heaps of variation, and you get the same in albino bread light. So I don't know. Like, I actually bred albino Darwin over bread light the same year that Joe did it.
Okay. Right?
But that was also the year that I was doing all the pepper stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and that came about because there was a guy I know, Brent said, "Oh, this guy's been trying to do this combo for 10 years. He goes, he never ever was able to do it. I'm like, what? Albino over bread light? He goes, yeah. I said, really? Challenge accepted.
Let's give it a shot. Why not?
Clutch of 36.
Oh, that's just so. Oh, cool.
So that was the same year that Joe produced his. So mine was pure albino Darwin over pure classic. What we call classic bread light, just your normal
standard
bread light. Okay.
Joe had a really dark, really beautiful, quite dark melanistic bread light, just a normal bread light, but it was obviously a lot darker, with a mixed blood albino, coastal Darwin albino, I think it was at the time. Okay. And of course, I had all these other pepper projects going on. I'm like, oh, far out. Like, when you kind of, what I call these dinker projects, when you kind of start them, I'm like, they're the clutches you just want to have like eight, and you've got a few boys and a few girls, and you just go, awesome, I can keep these.
Yeah,
when there's, guys. When there's a red light clutch of like 36 or 37 or whatever it was, I'm like, why can't I keep these? So I sold a few. So Brent Smith from KHP Reptiles bought a trio off me when I did it, and he just smashed his with food, whereas mine just kind of got fed once every few weeks and didn't do it. And he's like punting along. He goes, oh, you know, those head albino bread light I got off you. He goes, yeah, I grab it, you know, I'd be keen to see. And he sent me a photo when they hatched out, and all I did was kick myself in the ass up and down the room like, why did I not feed these things? Why? Like, in my head, I knew. I looked at it and thought, I'll bet you these will make some cracking babies. Like, I just had it. I didn't actually expect them to be as red, so to speak, as what they were. But I expected the contrast to be really good. I thought, no, these will make cracking albinos. And I just put them in there and bred them. I'm like, oh, you're an idiot. And he smashed it out of the park. And some of those were going for like $2,000-$2,500 a piece. Like, huge money for those really high red sort of ones.
Yeah, like that dark red that they had on. But yeah.
There's also a lot that come out that are in similar fashion to the Albina MDs that are much more typical yellow and white. They're not as stunning, just obviously a polygenic variation within them. But yeah, the higher orange stuff, and you go back to your albino zebras on, and I think, yeah, but if they were that orange,
and
had that really nice white background, yeah, to me, that's a game changer. That's
That'd like, be better. Oh, wow, I'll
check this out. So, you know, a bit like that Jag I posted up not long ago, real high contrast Jag.
I feel like a lot of us were dragged to carpet python because of the contrast, because you have the light color and the dark color, and you can appreciate that kind of stuff. So when the colors are kind of close and it's almost like patternless, it's like, and then, but if you can change one of the colors, like make the yellow,
is that the one?
There we go.
No,
is that the one
No, it's an albino one.
It's a nice
tiger. Oh, it's albino. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's an albino one. I don't know. Can I share the screen here? I can.
You should be able to. If not, if not, you can send it to Eric and he'll do all the work.
Is it present? Oh, here we go. Share screen. Oh, here we go. Share screen. Sorry, learning this one. Oh, here we go.
Fine. No worries. I don't even know what I just click until things work.
Is that not?
Oh, there you go.
Oh, did it share?
Add the stage.
Oh, there it is. It's just a slow moment. Yeah.
Holy shit.
So it's only young, but it's like you've got that real high
contrast. Yeah, no, that, the contrast makes it better.
Wow.
Wow.
Oh, man, that was just the first intro. There's a few photos there. Oh, look, I can share it.
Yeah,
there we go. Look at that.
So that's a Jag. That's a albino MD Jag?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Well, it's not a pepper jag, but there's MD in it. Yes,
Eric, can I borrow your inlands?
I don't think you're going to get the same.
Listen, I can dream. Yeah. I don't know what I'd do with it because I would, that would just be for me. But
there was there was another one that kind of, so there's a couple that caught my eye. I don't know. I hope I'm not revealing secrets or anything.
No, you got to feel
that one was pretty cool.
Jesus Christ, yeah, I love it.
Sorry about the dirty tub on that one. That's a ghost pepper. So that was one of the first ones I produced. That's a caramel Xanthi pepper. So it was just sitting there looking really nice. I'm like, I was cleaning on the day. I went, that looks really good. And took a photo. I'm like, the tub's filthy, but
that's always the way, because then I'm like, I'll clean you and then you'll stay in that perfect coil and I can take your picture after, and it's like all over the place and then you lose it. It's like, god damn it. So
that's exactly right. Well, that's going to another side. When you look at the Xantic MDs, I'm starting to see the same variations in that as well. Here's an interesting one. Yeah, I've actually
kind of looks like a Jamaican army.
Yeah.
So that's actually one of the world first ones I produced, caramel pepper. That was the first one I produced. I was listening to a podcast, one of your carpets and coffee ones.
Yeah.
And I put up a photo with some white scales, belly scales on a snake. I was like, what's this House of Pepper? Like, what's that? You changed my name? I'm like, no, we started House of Pepper. It was a bit of because I work with Brent from Brent Smith at KHP Reptiles. We work together. And it was always like we'd be at home, we'd see something, and he'd be like, are you on the House of Pepper sort of thing? And that's kind of where the name was, just a bit of a taking the piss sort of name. And that's where it started. So when I put up this photo, I was just cleaning. As you can see, you're right, it's in shed. You can see the shed there.
Yeah.
It was a tail. It was halfway through. I thought, I was cleaning, so I just thought I'll just finish it off. And I put this photo up in the House of Pepper, and then I'm listening to Owen, and I had a chuckle because I thought it was funny. He's going, tell me that's a diamond. I'm like, if it was a diamond, it wouldn't be in the House of Pepper because that's for silver peppers.
I didn't know all the rules here.
I get it. Like, I'm not, I'm not having a go, but it was like,
they show me laughing, this, and that's it. But it was,
Yeah, so that snake you put up, that's that snake. So it's actually a caramel pepper that has those white markings. And I've seen it in a few now. So I've actually got a had a pure silver pepper that had one scale at the cloaca that was just white. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. And then this popped up, and then that other patternless one you saw before, it has a belly like this, completely patternless like that. I need to get photos of it, but it's just, you know, I open the door and it wants to eat my face like she's an absolute pig.
Yeah.
Right. So I want one day I'll get some photos, but yeah. I mean, I know people say it's like pied bellied or whatever, but
well, that's how
that's kind of ball what we python. Thought,
Ball python started with white stuff, like patches like that, and then it would just bred to the point where the white increased. So,
yeah, something line bred, but I don't know whether it would be, you know, true pied in the sense of the word, you know, like a true pied.
I think it eventually would get there to a point maybe where like it would have more white, but yeah.
It kind of reminded me of what we have as reduced pattern diamonds here, where it's sort of similar to what stonewash is. And if you look at the stonewash in the belly with the yellow on the sides and the white belly and all, you know, so I don't know. That's what I was thinking about. Wow. Yep. That's spectacular.
So this is a pepper posset albino. I actually call this one charcoal. I gave it a name, Owen. Normally, I don't name anything.
Yeah.
But I called this one charcoal because it has, when it was younger, like those light browns on it, actually was like more of a smoky gray sort of thing. And it was kind of like a charcoal-y type color. So that's what I named her.
I like it.
But that's just like the variation going back to talking about the mixed blood stuff. So, I've got heaps of pepper posset albinos, and the variation is insane, from really high striped, high contrast black and like silvery gray to this sort of stuff. I've got another one I call two tones, because the front's completely there's this difference between the front half and the back half, and I'm like, oh, that's weird. So I just called it two tones myself. So it was like something different. And then you got stripe ones, train track style ones. Like the variation is huge. And me being me, I'm like, oh, there's so many different polygenic lines you could take these things into, depending on how they work and prove out. But yeah, so the first few clutches of all the posset stuff, I just hoarded them.
That one looks great.
That's that one I was telling you about. That's the one. That's the post double hit. Boy, I first produced it. I've just peed and don't do anything with, because he's just got that really cool striping and multi striping sort of look to it.
I mean, that looks like it's tiger. Like,
yeah, it's funny, right? I'm like, you know, I'm the total carpet python nerd, so I'm like forever scoping out people's stuff and looking at it, and I'll send it to Owen. Like, check this out, and he's like, "What the holy hell is that?"
Yeah,
this was one of those snakes.
I'm like, it's a tiger. Wait a minute. Is it?
So that popped out of a double head pepper albino to double head pepper albino pairing. Just came out in the clutch. I'm like, damn. Oh, that's cool. So it still sits here in a rack. Feeding. Yeah. It's like, I don't know what it looks like, large rats, and I haven't used it to breed with yet. So I keep saying to myself, yeah, you know what? One day I will pair this with a true double head girl. Oh, this is. So this is the Xanthic / ghost versions of MD.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool looking.
It looks like you took the picture with some sort of filter. Like, I'm like, the snake shouldn't be like this, but then like the rest of the room is in color. That's odd. Yeah. Like, that's nuts.
Yeah. For the people that are listening, and if you don't have the video, obviously, like we said before, we share the video on Patreon. But if you want to just go over to Darren's page and just, you know, start at the beginning, work your way through, put that wow face emoji on all the stuff that you can drool over it.
Well, it's the same we're seeing in that, where that photo was, there's a few others, and that one's quite light. Like, that one was a standout as a baby. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. Has that striping and everything else.
Yeah.
And then my biggest problem is I breed stuff, and obviously when they hatch out, it's like, oh, okay, go through the babies, you know, pop boy, girl, you know, and I kind of look and go, that one's really cool, that one's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then I tend to forget about them. Like they literally go in, I just try to feed things, get things feeding, and then next thing you know, 9 months has gone past or 12 months, if they're whole back stuff, I just forget. And then one day I open the drawers and go, shit, that looks pretty good. I haven't really paid attention to that before. Because most of the time you open the drawer, I take it out, put it in there, clean the drawer, you know, or swap the drawers over and put it back, and I don't really pay attention. And that was with that few exanthing things. The one there was just really, really dark, completely opposite end of the spectrum from that that one there. And I'm like, oh, look at the variation in these things. Like it's – we all talk about the albinos and the high oranges, but we haven't really looked at the exanthic version of, you know, what an MD obviously and coastal does.
Right.
But some that have just been sitting in the drawers, like I actually had some marked that I'll probably move these on one day, like I'll wait and see. And then I opened them up and was like, oh, these are crazy good. So with that, I don't know. Are you just looking on my page, Eric, for those photos or?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So where that one you just posted, there's like three pics of them, and then there's two really dark ones beside it, and then a couple of photos where I've got them in my hands. Because the same thing, like, it's hard, you know, I just take, like, there's no photography. I just use my phone, and I try to just get, you know, a ceiling light so I can get it there with no shadow sort of thing and just take a photo. But, some are just quite dark. I'm like, well, how's that going to look down the track when you actually make a snow pepper sort of thing. When you add obviously the albino into something really dark, you get that bright orangey sort of color. So is a snow pepper going to have a more orangey color with a real white background? Like, I don't know. It goes in my head. Like, I know what it should look like, but is that what it's going to look like? Like, so.
Well, that was actually one of my questions. Has there ever been one that popped out that you were for sure thought it was going to look like X, and then it turned out
to be Y? Like
Y.
I'm trying to think now. I'm looking at my photos, thinking there's something. Like most of the, I suppose, bread light turned out a lot oranger than what I expected, because if I had known that they would be as standout as what they were, there's no way they would have been put on the back burner. So that was one that I kicked myself for days. That is 100% definitely one of those. Most of the other stuff that I've been able to work with so far has been, like, you can Google a lot of the stuff. So any of the most of my other combos, the pepper jags were kind of a little bit different to what I thought, that they – some are much more, I guess, in line with, like, almost a zebra jag. Some have a zebra jag appearance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But once again, in those, there's huge variation. And that's something that, like, constantly blow. Yeah, like, so there's one. So for anyone that doesn't know, you can almost see, Jesus, like, a zebra jag or even granite jag to some extent. But still different again. But the variation, so I've got ones like that. I've got ones that have a lot more banding, I suppose, a little bit more heavier pattern. And then I have some that have a lot more pepper-type patterning.
Okay. And
first I actually thought, oh, okay, this is another one of those, like, reduced pattern-type peppers. But then, you know, you get that slight little head of neuro with the jags.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, hang on. No, this isn't a jag. Yeah, this is a jag. And I'm like, oh, wow. So the very first one I ever produced, which was a complete and utter idiot, the first pepper jag I ever produced, it was absolutely psychotic. Like, you would just open a drawer and it would just go, pew.
Like the short tails.
It was nuts. Oh, you couldn't even open a drawer. You know, normally you open a drawer and they'll sit there and they'll rest back and you're trying to feed them. Mm-hmm. This thing would just hightail it. You couldn't even get anything in the tub without this thing just flying out. I actually had to force feed it for 6-7 months. Like, you literally had to open the tub and catch it as it flew past, and then force feed it and put it back and forget it. And it sounds like me. Yeah, go.
It sounds like baby savus. When I had baby savus, like, I had extra tongs because they would bite and wrap the tongs and you just leave that in there, or they come flying over your shoulder.
Yeah.
You had to catch it and put it back in. Yeah.
Yeah. No, this thing wouldn't eat. Like these things,
Jesus.
This one just, which is unusual. I normally find Jacks to be pretty good to get feeding, but yeah. This thing was just, you open the door and it just went into an absolute fleeting mode of panic and just, I've got to get out of here, and off we go. And it took me a couple of years, and I've now got it's actually like now smashing food now. I open the drawer and it kind of thinks, and I kind of ramped, once I got it to feed, I ramped up its feeding to like almost every 2-3 days just to build that instinct, that like reaction, not think about it. Just open the drawer, mouth come out, food went in, it shut the drawer, it was all over and done within a couple of seconds before it had time to go, and and it's now starting to come along really well.
But
some of the pepper jags, like the variation is the thing that just blows my mind. Like when you even look at it with some of the granite stuff in their combinations, the granite stuff, it's fairly similar. You know what I mean? But the variations with these guys is like, far out, what's next? Like I would never have thought the variation that came out is something you would get. Or, you know, you look at zebra jags and they're fairly consistent in what you get.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Whereas these, you get ones like that, you get ones with more pattern, you get ones with less pattern. So I think there's so much more to come from them. And the more people that get them, well, you know, the more stuff gets produced. So
yeah.
Pretty cool.
I love the lack of head stamp. And
yeah, it's just blank.
You know, like very thinned out, you know, pinstripe type of pattern. And the other thing I noticed, it's almost like these are the set, like I guess you can see the jag influence, you know, if you're looking at this, it kind of reminds me of like, you know, what the saddles would be on a carpet, and then that would be the outline of those, you know, like the pattern that they have, and the pattern is gone, but the outline is still there, which is that's really cool. Kind of reminds me of Owen, what do you call it, Alterna. Like, you know, like some of those varieties of Alterna where they're all gray with black stripes. That's what it reminds me of, pattern wise and color.
I mean, yeah, you can get some Alterna, but it, like, they have a stumpy face, not like a diamond.
No,
like
I know. Yeah, I'm talking color and pattern.
I know what you're getting at, and I agree. So. Yeah.
Well, not only do you do, well, we've sort of talked about both the MDs and the bread lie as we're going through, but like, you know, one of these crazy ones that stood out to me, another one I sent to the crew, and the idea that you're going the opposite way with brettles.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's what I was saying. That's a exactly MD as well. So that one you put up before and this thing, they're actually siblings.
Oh.
Believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, actually from the same clutch. Yeah. Yeah. So this one was a turd feeder. The other one was just a pig straight out of the egg. Wow. But yeah. And now this, like, they're literally side by side in the rack. And I was feeding one. I'm like, wow, that one with the stripes, like, really nice. Like, he's marked. And, he's got my little gold sticker on there.
I was going to ask if you have stickers or tape.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Well, I started using different colored cards, but then it was I had yellow ones for, like, whole back and whites to sell and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
But now I've just not, you can see here, like, stickers.
Yep.
Can you see the hoarding problem?
I see a lot of stickers.
Yes.
It's an issue. And then over there, the smaller tubs over here, right? That's like the first one there is actually a ghost pepper, and that's from all this season, caramel stuff and these are other stuff in there. So
Darren's like, I gotta go to the store, I need more stickers. Like I'm out of stickers, I need more stickers. Yeah.
It's when you got seven different box colours of stickers. That's the problem. This one's an asshole feeder, this one's a good feeder, and this one's a whole back, and this one I'll put a number on the cell, and then But that real dark one was gonna be one that I was gonna sell, and I opened the drawer and went, oh god, that's really dark. Yeah,
sticker.
No, that needs to stay. Cross that off the list. Keep that one now. Someone missed out.
Yeah. My favorite is I have this caramel tiger clutch, and I starred two females as my whole backs, and then I'm like, I'll let one go. And then she just shed this week, and I'm like, All right. Well, maybe just put that little mark back on you. Like, we'll just maybe we'll backtrack on this, man. Maybe we'll keep you. That was
another 6 months.
I apologize. I was being too quick. That was too fast for me. I apologize. Yep. So,
yeah. How dare you?
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with me.
So this is another ghost. So this is one I put in between kind of the two, I guess. So that one's really dark. The other one's much lighter. And, you know, when we talk about polygenics, I look at that as a scale. Like the first one you put, it was really light striped and the other one was quite dark. So if you had a scale of 1 to 100 sort of thing, you know, 100 being really light, 1 being really dark.
Sure. You
know, kind of sits in the middle. But I've never really posted a lot of these things. Those photos that I put up recently were just, I thought, oh, you know, we're always talking about the albino bread light, the albino, posset peppers, MDs, albino MD sort of thing. But these are constantly skipped over, and I don't see many people with them at all. And I thought, well, I mean, these are really, to me, I love black and white type stuff. So to me, I'm like, yeah, okay, there's some improvement in my eyes that can be made. But it's a good starting ground considering it's the first F1 generation, really. So
yeah, 100%.
So I'm quite happy to see where these go in their own right as albino MDs. I mean, you can't go past those silver eyes.
No, you can't. And there's so many different ways to go with it. Like you can have a project that just increases the black and that kind of other stuff. And then you have other projects you can kind of play with too. Like it's, the variability of carpets is a blessing and a curse. So
yes,
yeah,
100%.
There's one more that popped out to me that I thought we would hit before we. I want to show Owen the white coastal project.
Show me everything. Damn.
Oh, no, that's different again.
Different. You don't even know what you're showing me.
No. I know this isn't the White Coastal project.
Okay.
You moved on to the White Coastal
project. That guy's actually sitting right behind me, that one. Do you know what that is?
The ghost.
Isn't that a ghost bread lie?
Yeah, that's a ghost bread lie. So when I did the albino to bread lie project, I thought, you know what? Let's do something different the next year. And so this is actually hypoxanthic. So it's actually from Wayne Lark's line. Okay. I had the, you know, to do the pepper project, I got the use of a hypoxanthic coastal male. Mm-hmm. And I did the same thing. I thought, you know what? Let's make bread lie versions. And I hatched out a few are quite nice, and I've bred them together. This year I made like 8 bread lie ghosts, obviously bread lie slash coastal 50-50 ghosts. And this guy's, maybe the photo doesn't quite do it justice, but it's actually was quite a standout. It's almost patternless. There's still pattern there, but the top half, the other ones, a lot of the others have a much stronger pattern. Whereas this guy just seems to be really, really reduced. I don't know if that's because it's a possible super, so I don't know if there's that influence there. Obviously, I have to wait till it actually grows up to size to prove that side of it out. Uh-huh. But this one was a real bugger feeder. Couldn't get it feeding consistently, would eat and wouldn't eat and whatever. And finally, I just started off on hopper mice. Mm-hmm. And then one day just offered it a rat and just went, oh, that's me. Now you're talking. And it just absolutely guts his rats now. It's like you open a rat and it's just like smashes everything that comes in the tub. So, it's really, really nice, very light. I kept two boys. I've got some older ones that are just exanthic bread lie, don't have the hypo gene in them. And they look really cool too, but this guy is the first one that looked like it did very, very different to anything else I've produced. So I was like, oh, well, whether that's, a super form of the hypogene or not, I don't know. But so whether that's an influence on the outcome, not sure. But, yeah, it's just very cool. Once again, another one of those things that sit in a drawer and just read one day. I went, Well, I should try to take – I'm not very good at taking photos.
So yeah.
It's like if the open a drawer, take a photo and slide it back and hope it looks good on the camera. And because
I mean, that's all you need now.
Anyway, look at the screen going, yeah, I think it looks good. It'll do.
Yeah. No, that, that'll do. Yeah.
I mean, phones today, man, they take pictures as good as, you know.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
It gets the point across.
But it's another one of those projects where you make clutches. And my two breadline girls pumped out massive clutches too.
Yeah, that's the problem with breadline coastals, you know.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I did have one, like, so with the Pepper project, I also wanted to do polygenic variations. So when I started thinking about where do I take this, where do I go, I'm like, besides all the genetic combos, I'm like, well, what about polygenic traits? So when I had the time, I put a pepper over a gelatin. I put a pepper over a black and gold jungle. I put a pepper over a breadline because I wanted I had this vision of, you know, different polygenic traits where you could make it, you know, what you would call a red pepper with that breadline influence. You know, take a pepper and make it a high black and gold version with the jungle, and then with the gelatins being white, make real true, you know, like just polygenic, you know, like I said, Dinka project sort of thing. But when I actually put the pepper over the breadline, I was like, I was hesitant because I didn't want a clutch of 40 babies. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, I'll give it a crack. We'll have a go. So I did it. She produced a terrible clutch, absolutely terrible. There was like 30 something slugs in this clutch, a handful of viable eggs. I hatched two. All I hatched was two, one male and one female. And I was like, yes,
that's all you.
A blessing in disguise.
Yeah, they sit just over here in the drawer. And you look at the two, and if I showed you one of them, you would swear it's a pure breadline. The influence of breadline in it. Yeah, I've put up photos of it in the past, and no one picks. Like, you cannot tell. It's probably a while ago now. But it remind me, I'll get a photo of it.
Yeah.
And it just looks like a breadline. It is so strong. And the other one has the Murray influence. And I'm like, because I really, if both had hatched out with that bread light influence, I'd be stoked because you'd have that red straight away into a pepper when you paired them together. But yeah, I hatched them out, and I actually had to question myself.
Really?
Did I
mix this up?
Did I put the bright boy in the?
Yeah, but I'm like, no, it's got to be so. I haven't paired them together because, you know, like I said, it's one of those projects. It's just, I've got a lot of those things that just sit here, and then one day I go, oh, you know what, I'll breed that this year. And then I make
probably do that,
I kick myself. So same with some of the jungle ones. Like, there's some real I've got photos of me somewhere. Some of the ones I crossed with jungle, the actual offspring are very quite yellow. There's a lot of yellow in them. So it's a
good start. Okay.
Yeah. A good start. I don't know if I've posted them all. See, what I do is I tend to take photos, put them on my phone, and go, that's really cool. I'll post that, and then I forget.
Then you forget to post it, yeah.
Yeah. So I just sit on my phone for a day. Yeah, that's it.
Yep.
So just, you know, with work and everything else, like getting time to post everything, I've really got to make the effort. And normally it's case of, oh, I can't remember what I posted. I'll just take a photo of something else and I'll put that up.
That's the problem, is I will take pictures of something that I think is awesome and I'll send it to this guy.
Yeah.
That one. I'll send it to him. I'll send it to him and he'd be like, that's gorgeous. And I'm like, yes, I've done my duty. The world will now know of this snake that I like. And then that's it. I don't send it to anybody. Like, and then later, like months later, I'm going through my phone and I'm like, oh shit. Yeah. Post it on the Instagram. So like, that's what happens. Eric gets all my pictures.
Yeah. Well, Brent Smith, KHB, we're exactly the same. Exactly. I'll go take photos and I'll be like, oh, check this out. And I'll just send photos. And go, oh, that'll make a mad post. Yeah, I might do it.
Yes,
tomorrow.
It will.
And then it just sits there and I forget about it, you know. Whereas, of course, he sits in his office most of the day long on his computer. Like, he's lucky because his wife cleans everything for him. It's like, I'm like, oh, God, that
that's
is heaven.
That's an option?
Yeah, yeah, apparently. Apparently I didn't know this at the time, but apparently, yes, it's an option.
I feel like I didn't do a vetting process.
Oh,
She's not here.
Checklist, excuse me. Clean snakes. Oh,
yeah, is that a deal breaker?
Cooked food? Oh, yes, good. I didn't get one of those, but he scored very well. He got himself a lovely wife that cleans all his snakes. So he gets the joys of going home and taking photos in clean tubs and everything. And I'm like, oh, it's all right for you. I'm like, I'm going to go home. You open a drawer and think, that looks perfect. It looks really nice. It's sitting in the right spot. And then there's a shit in a shed sitting behind it. It's like,
they always look best right after they shed, but they always shit after they shed. So it's like,
it's like never ends. But anyway,
and you could sit there and be like, people won't understand that. But I got flack once because I took a picture of a snake and its water bowl appeared empty. It wasn't empty, but it appeared empty. And people were like, it doesn't have any water. I'm like, yes, it does. And also, if it didn't, I was going to fill it. Like, that's why I'm in here.
Exactly right. Yeah.
I feel like, well, you're pretty close.
I'm gonna close it after that there's no water in there.
It's a picture day.
Yeah.
No cleaning or watering will happen on a picture day.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing when when you've got 10 snakes, it's easy maintenance. When you've got several hundred, work full time. Yeah. Sometimes it's a case of running around, opening all the drawers, just making sure it's got water, and then you go and start cleaning somewhere else. So, unfortunately, when you feed so much, you can only try to keep up with the cleaning. I've gone through my adult rooms. I'll spend the entire day just in one room cleaning all the adults, and I guarantee you the next day you've got to go back there and clean half of them again.
In a fresh cage? It's like, no, I need my scent in here. So it's just like,
it's like, I just cleaned it.
Why? Well, you take them to a show and then they decide to take turdy, one of the nice Perspex displays you've got, and it just runs everywhere. And it's like, really?
Really? There's always the one where it's.
You turn on your light at the show, you're like, click, click, and you're like,
Yep. And it's like, I smeared it all over the front for you, too. It's like, thank you. Thank you very much. You couldn't just do it and sit.
And then you got to take it out because it's been crawling around and saying pee and poo for ages.
You got to get
14 rolls of paper towel and you're trying to clean it. And then you get covered in it because it won't sit there. It won't just go wipe me dry. It wants to go around your head and up your arms and all over your shirt.
While this is happening, somebody comes over and says, I have a corn snake and I wanted to ask you questions about it. You're like, I don't can I give you a minute?
Well, I was curious if you had any tips, pointer when it comes to breeding spring breeders and winter breeders.
Non-spring breeders, like crossing red lie
with jungles or MDs with jungles or anything like that.
Yeah. So going back to that project, when I heard that, there was a bit of manipulation involved, and I would say also a side of luck. So for the albino, it was a pure albino Darwin male and a female bred lie. So I was right at the time when the Darwins were stopping breeding. So I was just coming out of that season. The bred lie kind of started warming up, and I'd given them the girls a couple of feeds to keep them going. So I kind of bumped the bred lie temperatures up probably a couple of weeks before I thought I'd introduce the male to try to trigger them, to try to like go, oh, things are warm. There was also a side that we actually had pretty decent weather, so there was a natural warmth as well. And I put him with both girls. One girl showed zero interest. She went on, she bred to the bred lie boy later on. So the girl that was sitting in the very top racks, we call them Python racks, then you call them Boa racks, the big vision tubs.
Yep.
So the girl at the top, which obviously would have been warmer than the one underneath being higher up in the rack with all the heat flying up, when I took the albino Darwin, so he'd been mating with one of the pure head albino girls. I took him out and thought, you know what, I'll just chuck him in and I'll see what happens. Put him in, opened a drawer. So I put him in on the weekend. I came into work on a Monday, opened a drawer, and they were locked up. And I went, oh, well, that's good. So I just left him in there for a week. I saw three visual lockups with the two. Mm-hmm. And he was literally in there for a week. And I went in there because that time of year, males aren't eating. Girls generally aren't overly interested in food. They will, some will eat, but they're not like, you know, during summer, they're sitting at the drawer. You open the drawer with your hand, you're going to get smashed. So it's a book. So during winter when everything's breeding, I just hands, you know, check everything. The girls are all pretty chilled. The boys are pretty chilled. I went in there and I opened a drawer with my hand, and I tell you, I reckon he missed my face by about this much, the albino boy. He just, I've gone, oh, I wonder how you go. Whoa! I guess you're hungry. So I literally clipped, you know, the end of his cycle and the start of hers. Mm-hmm. I managed to get like a week-long overlap. He was obviously still on fire from being with the head albino girls. And when I put him in there, he was just like ready to go. And I reckon that little spike in temperature that I did with the Brella was enough to just get one to come in cycle earlier. And yeah, he looked up. Like I said, after that, I wanted to put him in with the other girl and nothing. So he went back in with the first one and stayed there for the week. And yeah. Did the deed. So it was kind of, there was a little bit of work from my side to try and get it done, but mm-hmm. I also put it down to a lot of luck as well, just to get that crossover. Because I could have changed the temperature in the bread, and the other one showed zero interest. I put him in with there and there was just nothing. Put him in the other one, left him for the weekend, and bang, now locked up. Whether I'd left him with the other girl and she would have responded over a couple of days, I don't know.
Yeah,
but I'm like, well, this is working, so just let it run its course. So
when you're approaching the actual crosses, like the animals that you've produced that are crosses of both, right?
Yep.
Does that change? Like, what's your approach with breeding them? Do they just go follow suit as regular carpets, say, in the winter?
Yeah, I've bred them and produced my own albino bred lie. And I breed them like I do with everything else. So I start pairing. So I never pair anything early. I always wait. So the general rule I've always had to my season is I know when it's starting to change when the male anteresia stop eating. It's always been my go-to. So I don't care what the weather is. So, you know, if it's freezing cold at the end of April, May, right, which is coming into our winter,
right,
and my male max start going off their food, well, okay, then everything's going to cool a bit earlier. But if it's the middle of June in winter and they're still, you know, interested in food or feeding whatever, they're not ready yet, which is
okay.
Normally they're not, you know, normally they're gone before then. Right. So normally they're really active and you'll go in there and think, oh, I can't feed it, and I'll come up, they'll sniff the food, they'll be all over it, and then they'll go. They're not interested in feeding. So I know they're hunting around the cages looking for one thing, and it's not food.
Yeah.
Right.
So normally when I see that, I know everything else is going to start following on, and I don't pair anything until, you know, I've seen that for a number of weeks, but I'll wait till we get a really cold, solid block of weather. So to me, you know, that outside temperatures might be, you know, 4, 5, 10 degrees outside, which is what, like in your 40, 50 degrees, I think, or something like that for you guys over there. So it's nice and chilled outside, which brings the house temperatures down, everything. And when the males go off and then the females start to go off, that's when I'll start to introduce. And I'll only do it with a couple of things on trial. And I'll see if I put them together and they're still either ends of their drawers or the enclosures, then they're not ready yet. So I'll just separate. I'll leave it for another week and I'll try the same introductions. The other thing I'll do for trials is I'll actually put two males together. So I'll just grab two of my known boys that are good proven breeders. I'll put them together. You literally put them in the drawer within 30 seconds or if that, you know, they're ready for girls because they combat instantly. So you don't have to leave me there for long. But as soon as they combat, I'm like, okay, boys are ready. I'll normally give them another couple of weeks after that just to make sure they've cycled, make sure they're getting cold enough at nighttime. My room temperature normally gets down about 18 degrees Celsius, which is like mid I wrote it down so I could cross-reference.
Thank you.
Which is, you know, well, 80 degrees is like just under 65 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's sort of the temperature my room gets. So when my room gets down to that, I know everything's getting at nighttime, you know, cool enough. I like to have that for a couple of weeks before I really start burning. Antaresia. If you can't breed in Antaresia, then just sell all your snakes.
Get them up.
I bought the first V35 rack, Vision rack I bought was in, I think it was 2007, right, when a guy, Jason Boyes, brought some out. I bought that rack for breeding ants. I put a thermostat on it. I set it. I have never touched it. I've never adjusted the temperature on it. I've never changed the temperature on it. It is sat there, still runs the same heat cord, the same thermostat today. And those ants breed every season without fail. Doesn't matter. I've changed the ants that are in it. Like, you know, stuff come up and grown and swapped and sold and, you know, move things on and stuff. And I never change, never drop the temperatures, never change the temperatures. They sit at like 33-degree hotspots. 33. It's like 91-degree hotspots at the back sort of thing.
Yep.
So they're pretty warm, and I keep them like that all year round. I never ever drop the temperatures at nighttime, daytime, whatever, in the ant rack. And most of the carpets are run the same. As long as that,
right?
Because we're in the large python, or I think you guys call them boa racks, I think, the big Vision, big giant.
Yeah.
So the carpets in that, because they've just got a heat section at the back, and because the room's getting cool enough, they come to the front, and you can normally tell when the girls are like coming in cycle, because they're no longer, they're rarely sitting in the back. They've all come to the front. They're coiling around the water bowls. They're lying right up against the front. They're trying to get cool. So I'm like, okay, I know now you're trying to get cool, whereas normally you go through the day, they're on the hot spot, then they'll be over here. They're always constantly moving around, you know, obviously adjusting their body temperature. But come winter, you go in the room when it's cold, and they're all at the front. We're like, yep, we need to get cold. It's breeding season. So I'm always the visual guy. I let the snakes, you know, tell me what they're doing.
The serpent.
If you're playing the NPR drinking game, you have to finish your drink now, because Eric said it. But as far as like pacing, because like normally, like my roughy boy, it will be up against the glass doing this when there's an ovulating female somewhere in the room. Yep. And I had a little thing yesterday that my male Timor python, Lesser Sundas, Eric has apparently decided to leave by. So my Lesser Sundas python, my male, has been destroying his cages the last like 2 weeks. I'm like peeing all over the cage, wrecking it, like just moving things around. I'm like, why are you being such an asshole? Because I thought that they needed another year. And now I'm like, in my brain today, I'm like, are you trying to tell me something that I'm not picking up here? So it's...
He disagrees with your thoughts.
I think I might try to, because the way that my room sets is there's a stack of cages like here, and then there's another stack of cages here. It kind of makes a little like island almost that you walk around. And the Timor's cages back right up against each other, so they're both on the top of their stacks. And I'm like, maybe I should introduce. I'm like, well, I've never done this before, but I've never had a male just wreck the cage
hunting
for no reason. So I don't know if you saw that with some of your guys too.
Yeah, no, definitely. The other thing is, you know, through summer, obviously, open that cage, they come out there, they want the food. They're going to, you know, you put your hand in there, they'll smash it if you give them half a chance.
Yeah.
But during breeding season, the male's really active. You open the door, they come out. And, you know, I'll actually get some of the, like, what I call my more experienced males, a good, good, solid, proven breeders, they'll actually start to combat your hand. If you've gone in and moved the male, so you go, like, say, my big adult Darn boy over there, I go take him, I put him in one of the hats, and I think, oh, okay, I might pair up you as well. Yeah, I'll grab you out. And of course, they come out, their tongues flicker, and they go, oh, competition. Yeah, let's scrap. And they start coiling up. And it's like, man, it's not another, it's just me. But that, you don't,
that's great.
And you don't even hold it for long. It's like, yeah, I'll grab him, go in the room, open the door, chuck you in. Yeah, watch him for, you know, 30 seconds, make sure the female, you know, they're going to kill each other, everything's all right. Yep. It's like, yeah, sure. Yeah, cool. I'll go get the other boy. And he just comes out, smells your hand, go, oh, right, I'm going to get on top of you. And they start doing the whole climb over thing, and they're fighting with you the whole way. Not interested in biting at all, like just pure, like, you know, male-to-male combat. I'm like, oh, well, at least it's getting him ready for the girl. He's at his heart. I don't know
where he goes. It's hard to handle a male that's trying to combat you. Like,
yeah.
Especially
when they're 8 foot long.
Yeah. It'd be fun, yeah.
Well, so, they want to just grab and wrap and tighten, and you're trying to get them off. It's like, get off. Just
that's
get,
why my favorite trick tubs? Is to take a shed and just throw it in all the other males' cages, not the boy that shed it. Because I've seen a male shove his whole face into another male's shed and sit there for like an hour, just like his head in it going like, this isn't me. Somebody else is here. Like, it's the
How dare you?
How dare
who me? Is
whoever,
here?
Whoever he is. Like, yeah.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, shit, like, I'll do that occasionally, but I just, you know, if I've got a pair that I'm not seeing any sort of interactions with, I'll normally just go grab. I always go, there's two things. I always go for a proven breeder, like something that, you know, like my albino boy is a legend. I just chuck him in with any girl, and you can come back an hour later, and she's got no choice in what's going on. Like, it's on.
That male is the one I like to call will breed a piece of rope. Okay?
Yep, 100%.
Will breed a piece of rope.
Yeah, okay. Electrical cord, doesn't matter.
Yep, doesn't matter. It's good enough.
Yeah, she looks good. That'll do.
Best boys ever.
So I always go for a proven breeder. And the other thing, I always try to match sizes. So, you know, like the albino pepper boy I was talking about, he's quite small. You don't want to put him in with a 6 kilo adult male, you know, because there's an intimidation factor. Yep. And I believe that can stress a smaller male to the point that they're too scared to want to breed.
Yeah.
And you can put him in with a girl and they're just like, I don't know what's going on, but that last dude like beat the crap out of me and I don't want to know anything. Just put me back home and leave me be.
Yeah.
In a while, they've got a place to escape. So I always try to make sure if I'm going to put a 5 kilo male, it goes in with another 4 or 5 kilo male. Or if they're a younger 2 kilo male, then I try to keep that together. But that's only if I put them together and I'm not seeing anything. They've been together in and out. They've had a break or separation, whatever. I'm not seeing any results. Then that's kind of my next backup plan. Introduce a little bit of combat, and sometimes I'll do that in the cage with the female. So I'll have the female, I'll put the male in that I want to breed, and I'll introduce the second male, and I'll let them have a bit of a scrap. And not for a long time, you know, you don't have to put them in there for 2 hours to like kill each other. Like I said, you put
there
it in
can
there
be only sort of one.
Can, like, yeah, that's right.
there can be wait, only no. one.
So yeah, I'll put them in. That might be 10 seconds. It might be 30 seconds. It could be a minute, just depending on how the males respond. If it's a new breeder, sometimes they take a little bit longer. But I'll do that, and that will often stimulate the female too. Like, oh, the boys are fighting over me. Ha ha ha! Someone's going to get lucky. So. You take the male out, and not all the time, but quite often you'll go back an hour or two later and they're locked up. So
yeah. Have you ever seen aggression from the female towards the boy? So this year,
if she identifies as a male,
I mean, not even that. Like this year I had a proven female, multiple proven, like she's done multiple clutches for me. Yes. This year, a friend of mine gave me a hypo to put in with this proven female, and he tried to kill him. And it was one of those, like, this is not the kind of male that I will allow you to kill. Like, you need to not this one, please.
Yeah.
Yes. But this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've actually had a similar thing, even with animals I've paired together. Sometimes I don't know what caused it. I don't know why, but I have seen males – like almost combat like a male. You'll put a male in, you know, you think, because then you go to yourself, oh shit, did I take the wrong one out? You know, you got like, you know, 5 or 6 different double heads, for example. They all look pretty fairly similar. And you think, oh shit, did I actually move? Then you look back and go, no. And normally then I got my phone in. I'm like, I'm not got a photo here of it on X. I'm like, no, it's definitely a female. So what's going on? And sometimes I'll take the male out and I'll separate them, and then I'll go back later and they'll settle down. Sometimes I'll leave them together and just watch them, and eventually they will start to calm down. But I have had females that I've bought, I've prayed, I've done everything. As soon as you put a male in there, psychotic. Like, and I don't get it. And I had actually had a Sunglow Jag that was what was supposed to be a female. And mm-hmm. I've paired her up over several years. Mm-hmm. And the same thing every time. I'm like, it's got to be a male. It must have the smallest little hemi peens I've ever seen on a boy. Very unfortunate. And I paired up. Anyway, last year I put a male in. I thought, you know, I'll put a big male in there. It was kind of uh-huh. end towards season.
Yeah.
She kind of had a scrap and then nothing. I thought, oh, I'll let him go for a few days. I thought, you know, I'll just take her out. And she laid a clutch. I'm like, okay, you are a girl.
So we have just like,
you
want to
identify as a male in this day and age.
You just don't want to help me out here. Yeah. It's
yeah.
Yeah, I had a head exanic female that was the same way. I sent every exanic male I had at her, exanic jag males too. I'd get locks periodically, but nothing ever came of it. Yeah. No eggs, no nothing, year after year. And it's yeah. like the other girls that I have that I'm raising up are going to supplant you if you don't do something here. Like, I have exotic tigers. Like, get off your ass. Otherwise, you're going to lose that 4-foot penthouse you're in. So, yeah.
Yeah, no longer yeah. yours. Yeah. I've also had males locked with males. I don't know if you've seen that before.
I've had males. No. I've had yeah. two males. I had a proven male. I put him in with a male or with a female, and they chilled for like 2 months together. Totally yeah. fine, hanging out together, you know, moving to different parts of the cages, no combat, no nothing. And I pulled the one that was supposed to be a female, chucked it in with one of my proven girls. They were locked up in 5 seconds. I'm yep. like, the fact that this proven boy, who I know would combat anything, was just like, nah, he's cool. This guy's good. And I'm like, wait.
Gross.
Like, I don't know why you got to be like, you know, now you choose to be roommates. Like, I don't know what's going on here. So yeah. it was
a similar thing where I actually had a, what was it? Was it albino? Sorry, it was a silver pepper with something else. And I couldn't work out. Like, these things were locked up, like mating, like locked up. I'm like, obviously, it's a domination thing, and I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, okay, cool, that's good. You know, I thought there was a boy, it's a female, yeah, that's cool, whatever, nothing. And then the following season, I put a different male in, and they started combating. I'm like, what is going on?
I'm getting mixed signals here, yeah.
Yeah, I've had yeah. female, they've made it, and no eggs were obviously produced. And then following season, I thought, maybe the pepper wasn't ready or whatever, even outside other clutches. So I thought, oh, this year I'll use a different male. And they started combating, and I thought, going back to what you're saying about females, oh, maybe mm-hmm. she doesn't like him, you know, like mm-hmm. coming near me. And I just thought, that's weird. So often, because normally it's you put two males together and they combat, it's normally a good sign you've got two boys. Normally you put a male with a girl, right, they don't combat. Yeah. It's normally pretty obvious. So I thought, you know what, I'll take what I thought was a girl out, and I put it in with the girl. And exactly the same thing, literally went back a couple of hours later, and here he was locked up with the other girl. I'm like, so you are a boy.
You are a boy. So
does that make you in the world of snakes bisexual? Because, you know. It's like, not that I care, yeah. but it's like, oh, well, you did any side.
Just tell me what you want. Like, yeah. I can plan around it. Like, it's
stop confusing me.
just so confused.
That's yeah. crazy. Wow. Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've only seen it once, but it was like, it was just kind of weird. Like, I've never, yeah. I've seen them like chill, be cool, not do anything, all that sort of stuff. But to actually see two locked up, I'd never actually.
No, that's a new one. Mm.
I think the craziest thing that I've ever experienced breeding was producing one egg clutch.
One egg. I loved that clutch.
It's a great chicken. Clutch. It's a chicken. Where are the rest? Like, what the hell? It's like, what is going on? Just one egg.
One egg.
And she's like wrapped around it. And I'm like, I like open her up and I'm like, where are they at?
The hell are
they? Did you eat them? If you eat theirs?
What did you do?
I'm like, my God.
What was that eating?
It was a citrus tiger pairing. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Special. Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It was weird. I've never heard that, saw that. It was strange. I'm saying no.
Goddamn,
and I was like,
chicken?
Owen, have you ever had a carpet just produce one egg?
What?
And he's like, no.
What's hilarious, and I'm so glad we're doing a show today, and I didn't.
Okay.
I decided to be nicer to you. Guy. I got a Facebook history thing. And
I saw it too.
12 years ago, with your picture of your babies hatching from the nice little coils of their maternally incubated mother, and your thing going like maternal incubation success, and then like right after that is a picture of your eggs in my incubator, and I'm like, maternal incubation failure, because you didn't wrap them, you brought them to my house. It was like, you were up here, and I just brought you straight down there.
Oh, man.
And it's like, I saw that today, and I'm like, oh, share, no, I'm going to be nice to him. And now I'm like,
oh, man. That's special bites are full.
This is my first year breeding. I'm so excited. My first clutch, I'm doing maternal incubation. I'm not afraid of it. I'm just going to embrace it and just get it out of the way so I can say I did it. So excited. And I'm like, I'm so confident that this year of breeding is going to be just maternal incubation that I don't set up an incubator. Rookie move. And you know, the first clutch went without a hitch, and then all of a sudden I had a zebra jag and a red tiger, and I put them together, and there was like three eggs outside of the clutch, and I'm like, oh, this is not good. Maybe she'll reconfigure and get it. I sent the picture out. Owen says, pull the eggs.
Pull the eggs, bring them to me.
Like three more people. Pull the eggs. They're like, pull the eggs. And I'm like, but I don't have anywhere to put them. So real quick, I'm like, and it was like, what is it? Like, it was like freezing cold outside.
It was cold as shit. Yeah, it was.
And I had to drive to Owen's house, which was like 20 minutes away. So I'm like, how do I get these eggs to his house in 20 minutes? So I threw like all these towels into the dryer and just turned the dryer on. And I got them all
preheated.
Preheated. I wrapped them all up, and I'm like driving to his house.
Three eggs.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, that's a failure.
Yep. Am I success? Am I failure? Yeah.
That's generally one of those things you only do once.
Yeah. You know what?
Yeah.
I think 2 months later, you had an incubator ready to go.
Oh, yes.
Fridge, incubator plugged, ready to rock. No eggs, but you had the incubator.
Yes.
It's funny, though. It's something you see quite often. Like, I don't know how you guys, but people, they pair things. Suddenly go, oh, I've got a clutch of eggs. What do I do now? Put them in the incubator. I don't have an incubator. It's like, you paired the snakes.
That was the next step. Like, yes. If everything went well, you were going to get here. How are you not there? See,
I'm like, you paired clearly them together to breed. You bred them. Now you've got eggs and you haven't got an incubator. Where do you put the babies? Oh, yeah, I've got to get a hatchery rack. I'm like, prior planning, you know, like get a hatchery rack, get an incubator, you know.
I can't fault people for not having hatchling racks, because I had to like raid Eric's garage this year because I had way too many goddamn eggs. So
there it is. So I sent that to Owen, and he sent that to me, and I'm like, you goddamn asshole.
What a friend's for, right?
I can't
get grounded.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I'm not letting you fly too high. You get back down here. Back down here with me.
This level, pal.
That was good.
But I had to plug in all of Eric's old hatchling racks, because I put stuff together and I'm like, I'm never going to be this good to get this many babies. And they just kept unloading eggs on me. I'm like, oh, shit. Yeah.
It's funny. I get what you're saying, because often you'll kind of like, I would say, be breeding season, and I go to Brent, oh, shit, just found another clutch. And he's like, how do you just find a clutch? And I'm like, well, sometimes I'll check
in the drawer.
He's like, surely you know, like you've put a mail. I'm like, yeah, but sometimes I'll put a mail in, I don't see any action. The next time, like, you know what, actually, I won't make this pairing. I've got enough stuff going on. And you take the mail out.
Right.
And I said, you know, then you forget you've done it, and you don't, you know, you make this one pairing and you take it out, and of course several months go by, mm-hmm. and then suddenly you check your egg, like, oh, I think I put something there. You open the drawer up, and here she's happily on eggs, caught up. God knows how long they've been there for. And right. I'm like, oh shit, I've got a gosh. So anyway, and this would happen every season. This happens, and they'd be like, oh, I found another clutch. Oh, it's 27 clutches now. Oh, 28. Shit. I was only doing 15. Now there's 30 clutches.
Yep.
So anyway, last season, Brent's pairing up stuff, and then I get this text message. Oh, I found an extra clutch. I'm like, how do you do that? How do you just suddenly find one? Surely you knew. He's like, oh. And he did the same. I think he ended up with like 5 extra clutches that he wasn't intending on breeding. Same thing. Didn't see anything. I'll take it out. Obviously, mm-hmm. you know, they don't need to be in together for ages. A 2-3 hour lockup's enough to get it's the job enough. Done.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And it's mm-hmm. like, oh, I laugh. I'm like, oh, you give me apes, and now you're doing the same thing.
It's worse when you go around with colubrids because they'll double.
Yeah. Yeah, so, double clutch. Yeah.
I'll get a clutch and I'll be like, good job. You can sit here and eat your mice and be happy. And then like a month or two goes by and then she's like, here are more. I'm like, I did not ask for that.
I didn't order a double serving.
I was good with the 19 you already gave me. Giving me a clutch of like 15 and like maybe 6 or 7 are good. But now, of course, the 2 months I've been feeding you, you have now started back here again because you looked like dog shit after your first clutch. And now we've fed you and you've now gone backwards. It's like, great. I did not ask for this, but okay. So,
Suddenly that hatchy space you had is running out.
Oh, yeah. It's all gone. All gone.
Yeah.
All that gone? Yeah. Well, no, it's not right now. I've sold a bunch. But,
okay. All right.
The issue is now is that
get ready to fill it again.
we're coming very quickly onto egg time, and I'm like, and you and I were talking. I'm like, I did really good this year. I'm not doing that many clutches. You're like, well, you're doing this one, right? Yeah, and this one, yeah. And what about these? Yeah, those are together, dude. That's like 20 clutches. They're not all going to go. They all went last year. Shut up. Like,
stop making sense.
That's always the way you think, oh, you know what? I'll just pair up 30. And you know, like, oh, if I get 15 or 20 clutches, you'll be sweet. And that's the year you get 35 clutches, you know, because suddenly you threw this together and thought, no, I won't do that. I'll take that out. No, I won't do that one. I'll stop doing that one. Mm-hmm. And then everything goes. And it's like, now where do I put everything? I had to fill up the incubator with hatchies 1 year. Completely ran out of room. I had 240 something hatchies in my incubators.
Jesus.
All in little tubs and water bowls and everything. Oh, that was that year I said I'm not breeding again for another year or two.
The
following year I did another 17 clutches, I think.
Am I the only one that says that when I say I'm taking a year off, I actually take the year off? I don't think.
You take 2 years off. You're like, I'm taking a year off, and then 2 years go by and you're like, I guess I'll try breeding again. And people are shaking me, being like, Burke needs to breed his diamonds. I'm like, I'm trying. He's over there. So,
yeah. They won't ask me. They just
they come to me.
It's a habit.
Mm-hmm. So there was there's two projects left on the table that I wanted to talk about. Yep. One, before we jump off, but one, Owen, well, actually, I think I'm probably more excited about it than Owen is.
But I'm excited about a lot of things. But go on.
Look at that thing.
Jesus Christ.
Well, that's the white line and stuff I mentioned before.
Yeah.
So that's still last line coastal. But when I had the hypo coastal, I outcrossed it to a couple of coastals that I had. Uh-huh. And some of these really light ones popped out. And I'm like, wow, like they'll stand out straight out of the egg. And I'm like, wow, these are going to be cool. So I kept them back. The original, the father from that one got a tumor and he died at a fairly young age. But he managed to sire a clutch to another. So the original clutch, there was a really nice ghost. A really nice caramel and another Xanthic, which didn't survive for long. It died long after. But it was a share clutch. So the person I'd done the share clutch, which obviously saw half the babies. So I kept these couple of crackers out. He sired the original founding black and white ghost sired a clutch with the caramel, produced this one and a couple of others that came with it. So these are all up to size for breeding this season. Xanthic, there should be a photo of an Xanthic one, which is just black and white. There's a couple.
Is a caramel.
This is hypoxanthic. Yeah.
Hypoxanthic. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So, but I mean, I've not seen one like it. There's another guy, Corey Farr, that breeds some similar. Reptile Monkey, I think he calls himself, up in Queensland. I hatch these. I call them White Line. He calls his RM White Line now. He sort of messages, oh, can I call mine the same? And I say, oh, whatever, I don't care. And in hindsight, I probably said, maybe you should give him a different name just so there's a differentiation.
Yeah, separation,
separation. Right. But, you know, I mean, go back to what I said before, what you do in your house is your business, so it doesn't worry me. But, so hopefully that guy, the females are a little bit darker, a little bit more melanin, but still have, they're still very similar. That's the headshot of the boy. Yep. And
I'm like, I'll just take the hypo project and I'll just mix some tigers and stuff with it. Now I'm like, I don't need to really kind of go nuts with the Xanic shit. And I was like, great. Now I got to take the Xanic shit, cross with the hypo shit, and try to recreate this shit because you can't get over here.
We're gonna if we breed them to gelatins, Owen.
Shut up! No, that's
gorgeous.
God damn!
I have some gelatins.
Give you. That's it. Yeah, these guys are pure coastal as well, which makes it even cooler. But if you actually scroll down, where's that photo? Is this on my Morelia by Design page?
Yep.
If you scroll down. Oh,
that
okay.
One's
yeah,
there's
that one.
Pretty.
Scrolling.
I'll take Darren one of everything on the page. Just you know.
Okay, so yep. Stop there. So if we just go to where the albino pepperies, you can see that first one. So there, all those black and white ones. That is one, two. Yep, those ones there. So that's an Xanthic version of the same thing. Oh, so that one was an absolute.
What the hell?
That's been an asshole. It's a male.
Oh, what a dick. You should send him here.
Yeah. I think the portal opens up in half an hour.
Yeah. You really got to get the timing of the portal right.
I'll get my wand out. Yeah.
Throw your towels in the dryer. You'll be all right.
Throw your towels in the dryer. Yeah. Wrap it up. He's just been a real fussy feeding, like, asshole. He now eats medium rats now, but every now and then. So if you look at the nose, you can see he's almost got a blue tinge on his nose, which is
white and black coastal, but there's like blue that bleeds around the black. And it's just, it's almost you took a white snake and attacked him with watercolors and it kind of bleeds a little bit. And it's just, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, it is.
Sharpie. They'll love this. Like,
yeah. Want to see my texture collection?
That's
a great shot, man. What are you talking about? You can't take pictures. Stop it.
Yeah, what the hell, dude? Look at that
lucky shot, man. I actually took these because I had a few people, you know, it's always the way people put up photos and you can often see, like, they'll say, oh, look at this Xanthic, and you'll see, like, just all the colors taken out of the picture, you know. Uh-huh. And I had a few people going, oh, you know, I've never seen anything as bright as that. Is that legit? I'm like, yeah. So I actually took these in the first year. I think I took it to about three shows and just put them there on display. And I said, there it is. Look for yourself. And other people would come along, take photos. And, oh, wow, that's crazy. This, that, and the other. Because, you know, it's like pretty true to life, the coloration. It's like not dotted at all. It's crazy. I actually was going to grab it to show you today, but it's in shed. That
of
one.
Course.
Okay.
I'll take it out and check it over here. But it's actually in shed. So
the eyes. I love that. I can't get over that. That is
crazy, isn't it?
Oh my God. Great. Thank you, Darren. I now have a completely different object. The whole project is like, you can hear the gears like turning. It's like, yep. Cool. Yep. Nope. Stop all this crap. Change it over here. Spin the car. It's like, okay.
Yeah. But that's just the polygenics. You know what I mean? Like going back to what we were saying early on with the albinos and everything. It's the same thing. Like, it, you know, in essence, it's an exanthic. You know, like you could, who would think you could take exanthics to this level? You know what I mean? What can you not do? Wow.
And it's like real time. Like, it's like
May 19th, 2022.
Finally, the pinnacle at Burke is just,
Yeah. But if you actually close that photo and look up, there's photos of the two girls as well. So just at the top, there's the boys this in one? The middle, and that one and the one to the right of that as well. They're both there.
Oh, but Jesus Christ, the pattern!
Yeah, so you can see she's got a little bit more melanin in her than the actual boy, but
yeah,
right.
But it's the whites. Yeah,
it's like when you imagine some sort of like diamond. Jesus Christ! I mean. I'll meet you at the portal for these, like, these.
If you don't, I'm coming through the portal to get them myself.
I will come through. Eric's going to tie a rope around me. I'm going to jump through the portal, and then you just blow me up, and I'll jump back. Yeah. Exactly. Quickly.
If you actually look at the head closer on this one, it's actually got some really white patterning on it. I'm not, like, I'm looking a bit different. Like, you can... I don't know, it's a little bit aberrant, but you know, just either side of the towards the nose and the eye and around the back of the eyes, it's just really bright. When you actually see it in the tub, it's very distinct. And you know, we talk about chimeras and stuff, and you look at like when two eggs fuse, and hatch. Like obviously, that happens probably more often than not. But if it's in a wild type, you know, it's a wild type pairing, you would notice. It's only when it's a standout with two different mutations that you actually see this thing. And I look at that, and when you actually see it in the face, it looks wrong. Like, it doesn't look like that pattern fits the rest of the animal. And I just, part of me thinks, oh, I wonder if that's what it is. But I don't know. But it's harder to pick up, obviously, in a photo. But, yeah. Right. But they're all very, very white, very light-coloured. Very cool. And the caramel, I've actually got a caramel version as well. I don't think I put a photo of that. Oh, yeah, no, there's a caramel. There's a photo of the caramel there as well, if you go back. The caramels, like, they're down the bottom. Go right down. There's three there.
That's a white line caramel.
Yeah, that's a caramel. Oh, sorry, hypo version. Yeah,
that's a hypo.
Yeah. I have this habit of just everything's a caramel.
I mean, so,
I know what it is, but it just, you know.
So yeah, this is a hypo white line.
Yeah.
Sweet Jesus.
That's a female as well.
Owen, I think we could do this project. Uh-huh. You know, I have those. I was trying to make those white line tigers from the baling stuff.
Uh-huh. I can see the wheels turning. You know,
and I just hatched out a clutch of exotic tigers. So
We will have to talk. I have three females that are from that white line.
Okay,
baling stuff.
I can do this. I'm gonna go downstairs and sell some jungle jags. Like, and when I sell, I mean, I'm gonna put them in a box and kick him out, like, you know. Here. God damn, that is gorgeous.
Let me see if I can. Hold on, let's see if I can find it real quick, just to throw it up to sort of.
So, what's the next step with the white stuff? I mean, is it just refining and breeding?
So a little bit to produce more. So I've got a few more numbers to work with. And then, you know, the goal is to try to make something just solid black and white. It's always been, something like I said, I like black and white animals. Mm-hmm. So to try to refine that into a cleaner, brighter black and white down the track. But then, you know, if you start looking outside the square of just pure coastal, you know, take that really nice ghost boy and then into an exanthic pepper. So instead of having the more silvery grays that you get into exanthic pepper, you start getting a more white, like a brighter white in a pepper pattern. So, you know, it's where you go. Whether that would look any good as a snow with an exanthic albino, I don't know. Like, they're pretty white stripped out anyway. But to see that in, you know, even a granite, you know, try and get exanthic granite in that, you know, real black white coloration would be cool. So
yeah
first I'll, you know, always like to make sure I got a few numbers to work with, so it'll be just making pure white line stuff. And then once those numbers are secured, you know, I feel safe with taking them out and going, right, yeah, let me, you know, pair it with this, pair it with that, or do a few out crosses and, you know, start more line breeding projects, because apparently I don't have enough.
Apparently I need more. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're trying to hit that 1,000 number, right?
I'm scared. Hey, I've come close and I'm just like, 56 clutches I did one season. And that was when I had big numbers.
Holy
like,
shit.
Yeah. It's kind of scary, but see, I look at this. If you just close that window and scroll down a little bit more, because I'm looking at where you're looking now. Stop there. See the jag there? No, just go back up a little bit beside the
inner one. One up, yeah.
Left hand side, the bright yellow one. So it's like these guys. These are like my 98% jungle jags I was talking about before.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I kind of look at the coastal and think, okay, can I get that brighter, wider as I go along?
You have to be able to, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, I'm still working on these guys. I just keep putting the same line of jags and zeb jags back to pure jungles, just trying to improve. And with the jags, the babies hatch out, like, black and white. Like, just, you know, you'd swear they were, like, absolutely cracking exanthic things. But obviously that yellow pigmentation comes through as they grow. Like, these things are really fluoro bright yellow now. And I get asked all the time for them. You know, there's a few people now starting to realize. So when I first got some of these guys, I got one off a mate who was at 75% jungle jag. It was quite nice. And I just went, you know what? All the jags that we had out here, when everybody got them, everybody was putting, you know, albino into everything, which just made them look terrible, because you're putting a Darwin color into a jag and they just muddy brown and weren't really nice. And I thought, you know what? I kind of don't want to go there. I'll let everyone else do it. And like, I've got sun glow jags and stuff like that. But because this guy was 75% jungle back then, I thought, you know, I want to keep trying to make these better and better and better. And I just kept putting a line of pure jungles, which I've had for 20 plus years, which are all really bright yellow. I just keep putting a male back over the females of these, or and just keep getting them better and better, you know.
Yeah.
And I just, line breeding stuff, you know, like, you don't have to have the greatest mutation. That's just a jag. You know what I mean?
The start doesn't need to be great. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just one thing. You don't have to buy a, you know, bloody multi-gene thing to produce something cool. You can just take one thing and make it the best that you can.
Yeah.
You know, refinement. That's just a jag. Yeah, I've got those, and I've got zeb jags the same, all the same, just fluoro stuff, and I just keep making the same things. And mate, I think they're like F4 or 5 generation now. So I'll grow them up, and same with the jungles. I breed pure jungle to pure jungle, then I'll take a male and put it over these and grow them all up and make more. So, you know, there's plenty of opportunity for everybody out there to do something. You don't have to spend $10,000 or $5,000, whatever it is, and have the latest and greatest.
Yeah.
But, yeah. It's very cool. That's that reminds me of that one that I sent you, Owen. Charlotte thing.
Yeah, the ultraviolet. Yeah.
The last shocker of the night will be dum 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 dum. Let me dun, dun, dun. This crazy thing. If I read the post right, it just kind of hatched it out.
yeah, and that stir up some people. Yeah, so it's quite a funny story. So I wholesale quite a few reptiles and stuff, and I was wholesaling to a local pet shop here, and I got a phone call, and they said, "You've got some bred lie here. This guy produces them every year, and every year there's some striped ones in the clutch." He goes, "You know, I've got a couple. Are you interested in buying them?" And I'm like, I've got too many projects on. Mm-hmm. Like, so I actually ran Brent, and I said, "Mate, told him the story. I said, this guy, you know, I'm just going off what I'm being told at the pet store. And I said, apparently every year he breeds these, he gets some of these striped bred lye out. You know, it could be something. I've got like 30 other projects I'm working on. I don't really have the space for bred lye at this point mm-hmm. in time. You know, and he goes, yeah, I'll buy them. So he bought them, took them home, grew them up, bred them, and produced a stain wash. And I'm like, mother, father, once again, I have done it again. You know?
So I really got to just start adding to my house is what I need to do.
So he's actually going through the process, and he's done a few pairings in the meantime. You know, like I won't go into like some of the stuff I see, and you know, like here's this. I've proved it out. If you don't believe me, that's your problem. I'm like, well, if you're going to call it something new, at least
you're going to have to,
give some visual history of what you've done to say it's something new, like. You know, when I did the peppers, you know, I had photos of the pepper with a pepper, or the pepper with a jag, albino with a pepper. Like, there was all the photos and photos of clutches and everything over the years that taught me to do it. So there was left no question. Now that they're out and about, you know, people are producing them all over the place. So, but one of the pairings, this guy popped out, and I'm like, well, that's weird.
That's different.
Differently lighter than everything else, you know. Like some of the other stuff in the clutch is just normal, and just this one that I produced from that line. So I don't know until I actually breed it again. It's only one.
It could
be some random anomaly, like, you know, to me. One, I've seen many singular things. I've seen gelatins way back when they first kind of popped out, fully striped. It ended up going to it was bred by Tremaine Anderson. Oh God, it had to be 20 years ago, and that was back in the day when everyone was like low-cal, pure, none of this other bred stuff. There wasn't mutations around, and he hatched this one. It was all striped. He goes, "Oh, no one will want that," and he sent it to a guy I was working for back at the time, which was Tim Mansforth, who owned Ultimate Reptile Supplies, was a reptile product wholesaler. And he sent it down to him, and I was there, and I saw it and went, oh, that's crazy. He bred it, did everything with it, just completely normal, never produced anything different. There was another Darwin way back, and they called it a ghost Darwin. Same thing, had a weird aberrant patterning on it, something totally different. It was bred, never produced anything. They just, you know, people saying, oh, it's incubation, it's this, that, and the other. I'm not sure what the cause was, but they were just one-off anomalies, you know. So whether this is the same thing, no idea.
Still cool snake to have, right?
Yeah.
So just sits over the back here in the drawer. I got fed yesterday.
This is from
to eat my face again today.
This is from, I guess, the you said he produced some stonewash. Did you get some of those stonewash, or did he just some?
Yeah. So we have projects that we work together on. So. We went through a period, you know, I was breeding rats and mice commercially. Brent owns an auto parts world place, sells car parts and wholesales to, you know, workshops and stuff. And he had stuff I wanted. I had stuff he wanted. And he goes, I'll buy this off you. I'm like, well, you sell me that. I'm not selling that. I'm not selling this. We could never.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. We need to make these things happen. How do you make this happen? And we could never, you know, bridge. Not that it was even so much the money, but I'm like, I've got albino peppers. I need granites. I've got granites and I want this. And you know, and all these sort of things. And finally, so I actually work with Brent now. So Brent, you know, because I might remember I battled with depression and everything else. And I had a bit of a bad year with losing mum and dad, my dog and everything in a real short time, and friends and family and uncles have passed away. Like, it's just been a shit year. And I'd been away working with idiots, and I just come back and went, no, I've had enough of this. I just, you know, can't work with these Muppets. And Brent rang me and said, look, I need a driver. His one was going to jail. When I say driver, just deliver parts for his workshops. And
oh, you're not a wheel man for like a bank job or anything like that?
Yeah, no, maybe driver? I should be though. Yeah. Maybe. Not that I could probably drive that good, but it doesn't matter. So I said, yeah, no worries. And, you know, started working with Brent. And it kind of, it's been good for me because it got me out of the bad headspace I was in. And we get along well. Like we give each other shit all day long, give each other abuse, all that. But it's all
it's good.
You know, you're probably the same. And so we're there one day and we thought, and he's like, I need to get these projects done. So one of the projects in point, so he gives me grief about not producing Albino bread lie, right? Because I put it on the shelf and because he produced it before I did. So it's always like, oh, he never produced any Albino bread lie. What an idiot. Rah, 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 rah.
All right.
So he tried for 5 years to put a pepper over a granite. Right? It never produced a clutch. So I'm like, dude, give me a granite. Like, let me just, I've got a couple of boys, they're gun breeders, just give me a granite. Oh, I've got one here, doesn't eat well, it's this, that, and the other. I said, oh, so give me your shit, and I'll try and work with it.
Get out of my way.
I know there's a massive virus issue out here, and I know that I've given Brent animals in the past, and he's tested every animal in his collection, and they've all gone up clean. So I know he's got a clean collection, and he knows I've got one. So I took this granite. It was a granite jag, posshead albino at the time, and I thought, just give me one. So he brought it home. I put it in the drawer, left it for a week and a half or so, walked over, offered it a large rat, smashed it straight away, went in there 4 days later, smashed another rat, smashed another rat, smashed another rat. I'm like, I thought you said this thing was a bad feeder. I said, this thing has a knockback of feed. Like, it's just taking extra large and jumbo rats now, just destroying everything. So he's like, oh, well, it wouldn't eat for me. So come in the season, first thing I did, silver pepper, straight in with the drawer, in with the granite. Went back an hour later, they're canoodling. He's spurring the girl. I'm like, oh, that's good. I think I went back an hour later, took a photo, went back an hour later, sent him a photo of them locked up. I'm like, I don't know what you've been doing. But
clearly, they were sending me a bad feeder, non-breeder. What the hell is this thing? Yeah.
So, of course, it goes from that, goes straight into ovulation, straight in the shed. And then she was due to lay. So she was in a V70, which is what he had her in. So I thought I'll just mimic the same thing. And she was pacing, like you could tell something wasn't right. She wasn't happy. She wasn't prepared to lay in the draw. And I thought, you know what? I had a python tub spare because I had a male that was in that in with another girl. I thought, you know what? I'll give this a good clean. I'll air it out and I'll just chuck her in there, put a hide and some sphagnum moss and a few other things and chuck her in and bang, laid a clutch within a day of putting her in the thing. She obviously just wanted more space or wasn't happy. Maybe it was a temperature thing. I don't know.
Right.
There's actually a photo on my page somewhere because she had no idea what she was doing, half on the eggs, half off the eggs, same sort of deal. I'm not sure where it is.
You got to love the good mothers, you know.
Yeah. So anyway, laid the eggs. Oh, here we go. Oh, that's right. She caught up beside him. Yeah, this is it here. Do you want me to share it, Eric, or?
Yeah. Go ahead. Yep. Yeah. That's fine.
Give me a sec. Let's click on me. Share screen. Probably come up. There we go. So that was like within an hour of pairing them together. Yeah. And you see, he was like spurring her around the side.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, right. That's great. Yep. Went back later. You know,
locked up. Yeah, that's a lock. Yep.
So I'm like, this is how it's supposed to work, mate. Don't know what. See, she, you know, she wasn't massive, but you know, she was good. And then that's it. She's gone into the start of ovulation.
Oh yeah.
Wow. Yep.
Yeah. Holy shit.
I'm like winding friend up like, you know, tomorrow. Like, oh, hey. Wow, 5 years. Oh, you couldn't do it. You know, had the female for 3 months. This is what happened.
You have to make up your own breeder success, breeder failure.
You have to make a little thread. Yeah. It's good if you post it on Facebook because it'll keep reminding you when it happens. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. So then, of course, straight into a shed, as they do. And there we go. Nice. So that was it. I moved her in the drawer. He's like, oh, I'm caught up on these eggs. I'm like, wow, really?
No, you know? No.
Never. Oh, that's great. Another, I've had one rolled over there, you know, never know. Put that on the side. One slug, yeah. And that was the clutch. So I think that was the last of the photos. Yeah, I don't know what that is. Oh, that's something else that's actually up. So anyway, but yeah, so. Okay.
So very cool.
So I get that, yeah. So she's, yeah, so that. That was a granite jag, posse head albino. That's granite jag head albino. So
okay. We've
got now jag, double head, pepper granite that are also posse head albinos growing up, and mine are smashing small rats now. So I doubt I'll go this year, but probably next year. So, wow. But okay. Yeah, it was.
That's cool.
Yeah, one of the, there was another one I did as well. Oh, that was right. Yeah, so we have these competitions all the time. Mm-hmm. So the other project that Brent couldn't do was the Gash bread light. So the Xanthic bread light. So he bought a pair off me when I did the hypo Xanthic over a bread light. So I've bred mine multiple times now. I'm not sure if he's had a clutch yet. Mm-hmm. But he's lucky with odds. Like he gets he's a tin pot. Everything that's pos het is just a het for him.
He's one of those guys. It's like how Eric's like, I bred the most heavily banded animals together and all my shit has stripes. I'm like, what? My shit is striped and I don't have a single striped animal. Like, yeah, no, it's yeah.
You and I are in the same boat.
Yeah, shut up, dude.
Yeah, the odd gods are on our side, that's for sure.
Oh man, yeah, that's been great, man. That's been great catching up with you. I love living through you guys down there.
Gotta give me a couple years. Give me a couple years. Come back, and then you can like totally ruin. You totally change the course of my collection yet again.
Like, hang on, we were going that direction. Now
we're going here. It's like, yes, but while you were doing this, I was doing this. It's like, God damn it. Yeah. So,
And so, how can people get, I know you have a YouTube channel where you do the egg cutting thing, which is awesome. Yeah. I love that. I love watching that. Yeah. That's always fun.
Yeah.
Glad you're not prehistoric petting those things out of the.
Get out of here. You.
But it's always cool that you guys are hatching these crazy things out and you're just cutting eggs and, you know, seeing what they are, you know?
It's kind of a fun thing. We kind of started doing it because like there's so much false information, I suppose, given out in the hobby with breeding, right? Everyone thinks, oh, I'm going to buy a pair of Minglos for $6,000, right? $3,000 each, and I'm going to breed them together, and I'm going to hatch 20 Minglos, and I'm going to make $60,000. Yeah, no, that doesn't work at all. Yeah. And so we started doing it because nothing ever goes to plan. You can do everything right with your male, your female. Sure. You can cool, you can give them condition, all that sort of stuff. As soon as you've paired them together, it's out of your hands. And the amount of times we would see people going, oh, another perfect clutch and 100% hatch rates and all this sort of stuff. Okay. Yep, that's a reality. That can happen with that clutch. Mm-hmm. What about all the others? And when you breed enough clutches, you know, there's slugs, there's eggs that die. You can candle them if you want to, but if they're going to die, they're going to die. Just because you've candled the same veins doesn't mean it's going to hatch. Like, it can still go off for whatever reason.
Yeah, you can still bomb. They could die fully formed in the egg. Like, and there's also
many times
you have this idea in your head that's like, I'm going to take a caramel and a tiger, and I will breed them, and I will get all caramel tigers. It's like, all right, you might get two. Like, I don't like. So,
yeah,
you might get.
Oh, one. I got none.
I got.
That's me.
First breeding one. Yeah. One I got.
That's how I roll. Okay. Why make it easy for ourselves? But yeah, so we started doing that just to show, you know, the realities of it. I thought, people might not like it.
Yeah.
we don't care. It was just a bit of fun for us to share, you know, what knowledge we have and realities of breeding and keeping and deformities in eggs and things that have died in the egg. Like, we show it all, isn't it? It's not edited or, you know, whatever. So what you see is what you get, same as your guys' shows. And I thought, oh, probably people won't like it, but it's surprising the amount of people we get at shows that come up and go, oh, yeah, when are you doing more egg cutting shows? Like, they're really cool. We love watching them. The kids watch it. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't think anybody would want to watch us dumbos watch, you know, cutting a few eggs. But
the miracle. Yeah, it's, like, I feel the same way about me and Eric with the podcast. Like, I listen to you. Really? Why?
Well, I think to be successful, you've got to have, like, you've got to have that relationship like that you and Eric have, where you know, you get along, you have a laugh. Honestly, mm-hmm. the amount of in jokes that come out in our cutting shows,
uh-huh.
right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The amount of times we'll be at work and we'll see some post, and then we'll have a freaking good old giggle at work, and then, you know, we'll be saying, and someone will make a comment, and you know, it's like just taking the piss out of the post we've seen.
Yeah.
Him and I, no one else knows it.
Yeah.
And I'll be over here cutting the eggs in. Trying not to burst out in hysterics laughing, and then I look at him, and then he gets the giggles, and I'm trying to look away, and it's like,
we know what's going on.
And I'm like, don't go there, and you try not to laugh, and then it's like, oh, I've got to look over here somewhere or other, just so no eye contact. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. We enjoy it.
You guys have great chemistry for sure.
That's awesome.
And you're right. It does. It makes it better to watch, you know. But then
and listen to it
for here in the States. Mm-hmm. It's like. You know, it's always ball pythons getting cut and whatnot, you know. So it's awesome to see actual snakes I love. Like
carpet pythons, yeah.
You know what
I mean?
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, so. We try to share it, let people see the reality of it, sort of thing, you know, and
very good
mutations as they hatch out. So, you know, we've cut a few world firsts on the shows, which is cool. So yeah something a bit different. But
And if they want to get in touch with you, what's the best place? Facebook?
Darren Whittaker, Morelia by Design. Yeah, I do have Instagram, but it kind of shits me putting out photos because if they're not perfectly right, then you can't put the proper picture on. So I used to post a lot on Instagram, and now I'm like, photo doesn't work because it cuts out half the picture, cuts your name out, cuts something else out. So I am on Instagram. But yeah, Morelia by Design on Facebook and YouTube. Darren Whittaker, Morelia by Design on YouTube. So. A lot of stuff there, so I don't know if this actually linked there. I set up StreamYard on it, so I'm not sure if it went to that destination or not, but I'll link it through later. It's all good for education. Absolutely. So I'm always here to help. If you got questions,
I can send you a file, you can upload it to your thing if you want to do that. That's I could do that too, whatever works.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be awesome. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, yeah. All right. Owen, you got anything else before we hop off?
Not really. I mean, go to rogue-reptiles.com, check out all the stuff I got for sale. I am swiftly running out of everything. Like, you know, I know you and I were talking about going to do the big show in Daytona, and it's just been like
gone.
I have one white lip left, and I'm like, damn. Oh, wow. I'm also down to like two rhinos. So it's like. Ooh. Y'all want to strike when the iron is hot because stuff is going. As far as shows, I don't have anything vending as far as March, but I'll be back at Hamburg in April. So
Morgantown, every corner.
Oh, yeah, Morgantown. Hopefully it won't be. Hopefully the line won't be. Hopefully the line will be still. Yes. Down the parking lot,
you won't have to wait in the line.
Yeah, I mean, into. I am okay with what was happening there. Let's keep doing that. So, also, Rogue _ Reptiles on Instagram, places like that. You know where I'm at this point. The Patreon and all that fun stuff. The other thing is, and I have gotten clearance to announce this. That the MPR code for Cold-Blooded Cafe has been reset. So if you have used the MPR10 code before, you can
use it again.
Yes.
One time.
So the MPR10 code gives you 10% off your rodent order for one time. Now they have reset the code. So if you have used it in the past, you can use it again. This is trying to get a little bit of incentive for people to come and work with Cold Blooded Cafe. They have sales all the time on the website. Follow them on social media because they do usually do a sale a weekend for things like large rats, medium rats. They're starting to expand their bird products. These are good food, well packaged.
Yeah, they're great.
It's what I feed. It's what Eric feeds. Great stuff. So again, MPR10 at checkout, 10% off of your first order. And if you've used it before, you can now use it again for one more time.
Okay.
So there we go. If there's any confusion, I swear to God, I'm going to smack you all. Like, I'm pretty sure I lined it out freaking perfectly. But there's always going to be one person.
Even I get it.
Yeah, there's like one person's like, I did it once and it won't work again. It's like, Jesus Christ. Yeah, so
I bet you that person's in the NPR chat.
I am.
That's anyway, an inside joke, Darren.
Yes, it is.
See? There we go.
Anyway, I think it's all I got. But if you have the extra stuff or do we need to do, are you going to insert the pre-recorded? Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Fancy. So fancy, we're high tech now.
Yeah, oh my god,
it only took us 13 years to get here, but here we are.
I mean, think about where we'll be in another 13.
I might be dead, I'll be like 63, dude.
Dude, might be you're 63. Like, Eric's gonna be in an iron lung going, like, I don't, what's it like with your.
I still love carpets.
Yeah. We have gone off the rails in the final moments here.
Lovely.
But thanks everybody for listening, and we'll catch everybody back here next week for some more Morelia Python Radio.
Thanks, guys.
If you want to support the show, here are some ways that you can. You can follow us at Morelia Python Radio and the NPR Network on the socials. Subscribe and share the podcast. That always helps get the word out there for us. Check out the rest of the podcasts that are on the NPR Network. There's a lot of great people doing podcasts on our network. Cold Blooded Caffeine, for anyone that is a fan of the show, knows that I love coffee. We're happy to be affiliated with Cold Blooded Caffeine and our the carpets and coffee blend. We have an affiliate link in the show notes for you to use to give us a little kickback. Cold Blooded Caffeine not only has a great selection of coffee to choose from, but the best thing of all is that 5% of the proceeds from every bag sold is donated to wildlife conservation efforts in coffee producing countries. Trey Hall and McKendrick Dunn are great guys, and we're proud to be affiliated with them. We also have Cold Blooded Cafe. We have the NPR10 code that you can use again, even if you used it in the past. It takes off your first order with them. Cold Blooded Cafe has some amazing top quality rodents packed perfectly. They also run specials all the time, so be sure to go over and check out their socials so you can stay up with those impromptu savings that they share with their customers. Want to learn more about Morelia? Check out our website, MoreliaPythonRadio.com. If you want to get in touch with us, MoreliaPythonRadio@gmail.com. If you want to support the show even more, you can check out our merch store, and we also have a Patreon for you to check out.